Can I ask everyone please take your seats?
Good morning, everyone. I'd like to welcome you to this March meeting of the Commonwealth Transportation Board.
I ask first if everyone could please stand and we will
do the Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you all very much, and we'll get right into the workshop items, the first being Easy Pass and the Virginia Operation Overview and Challenges. Mr. Lawson.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. I think I had to get around all the technology this morning. First one? Yep. Good morning. Last month there was a request that we provide an update or overview on Easy Pass and how we are looking to address the oncoming new facilities in the Commonwealth. So what I thought I would do this morning is start off by just kind of giving you an overview and an update of just Easy Pass in general and how it operates within Virginia and some of the challenges that we're looking forward to and how we're looking to address them. First off, Easy Pass is a large network. It's not anything specific to the Commonwealth. It is participated by, or Easy Pass is an association of 24 different toll agencies across 14 states. The toll group was created to form an interoperable network of toll agencies. It is the largest toll organization in the United States. It currently is processing over 2.4 billion Easy Pass toll transactions a year, collecting over $5 billion in revenues. Virginia joined the Easy Pass group, or the interagency group as it was called at that point, in 2003. And even before then, Virginia was collecting electronic tolls under the name of Fast Toll starting in 1996. Starting in 2004, Virginia actually was accepting transactions through the Easy Pass network, taking advantage of the brand recognition, the customer satisfaction that comes along with Easy Pass network, and really supporting the Easy Pass network, which has become the world leader in toll interoperability, with more than 21 million Easy Pass transponders in use today. This slide just kind of illustrates for you the footprint of the Easy Pass network. All the purple states you see colored here are the states that have toll facilities that are operating under the Easy Pass network. The gray states that are intermixed do not have electronic toll collection, and the blue states you see down toward the south have their own electronic toll networks. I'm happy to report that Easy Pass is doing all they can to continue and to support interoperability and have just established a new membership category called a national affiliate to allow other entities such as the states that you see here, North Carolina, Florida, to be able to join and into the interoperability that comes with Easy Pass without becoming a full-fledged Easy Pass member having to discard their own existing networks. In terms of Easy Pass within Virginia, Easy Pass is accepted for electronic tolling on all the facilities within the Commonwealth. You see the full list here, including the two that are managed by VDOT, Hoyt Parkway Extension and the George P. Coleman Bridge, and all the other facilities that are managed by others across the Commonwealth. Virginia has the sole membership into EasyPass for the Commonwealth, and all the other facilities fall kind of under an umbrella membership and are members through the Commonwealth, through VDOT. The EasyPass operation within the Commonwealth is handled by VDOT through a contractor. We currently have a contract with Faneuil Incorporated, which is a Hampton-based company, to provide the back office and the customer service center operations. We currently have about 560,000 accounts, EasyPass accounts, and about 900,000 transponders in service. In calendar year 2011, we processed nearly 130 million electronic toll transactions, collecting almost 190 million in tolls. In grand total, and I'll explain the differences on the next slide, we processed nearly 140 million electronic toll transactions and over 220 million in toll revenues for the facilities within the Commonwealth. As part of the interoperability that comes with EasyPass, we also process what are called away agency transactions. We process transactions for Virginia account holders that use facilities in the other participating states, as well as we process transactions for account holders in the other states that use Virginia facilities. During 2011, we processed or we received almost $36 million, we sent about $36 million of revenues from Virginia accounts to other account agencies within the EasyPass network. And the back flip side of that is, and this was kind of a surprising number to me, is of all the transactions on the Virginia facilities, approximately 11% of the transactions and about 18% of the total toll revenues processed on the Virginia facilities came from EasyPass account holders in the other states.
Can you go back for a second?
Sure.
So the difference between the 11 and the 18 is suggesting it's where what facilities are being used because they have different rates?
Correct. It just would indicate you have your higher toll rates.
Chesapeake versus Coleman Bridge versus wherever.
Correct. Yeah. Correct.
So 18% of the total revenue is processed for out-of-state folks.
Mm-hmm. In terms of account management, again, as I mentioned, we do have a contractor, Faneuil Incorporated, that manages our EasyPass network. They provide for the back office as well as the customer service centers and the database management, inventory control, the full suite of activities associated with EasyPass. The account sign-up, which is, I guess, we're talking about a lot as we're looking for the new facilities and being able to prepare for additional facilities. Currently, we have several methods to do that. We have, obviously, you can mail an application into the customer service center, and the main office is in Clifton Forge. There's a toll-free number which you can call to address your account, set up a new account, or attend to your account. There we have a dedicated website, EasyPassVA.com, where you can log on to create an account, again, and to manage your account. We have three walk-in centers presently, one at Coleman Bridge in Gloucester Point, one in Herndon, and one in Richmond. Interesting statistic, of all the new account activity 68% of new account activity is handled through the online web application, and that activity has been growing significantly in terms of just simple account maintenance. Web activity has grown 9 times since 2008, becoming the predominant means by which people are interacting with us. In terms of the walk-in centers, the most rural location, the Coleman Bridge, Gloucester Point location, is actually the busiest of the 3 customer service centers. In terms of the way we manage our accounts or manage the transponders, we do not sell the transponders to the customer. They remain the property of VDOT and will be replaced through warranties, through just normal utilization. The batteries have a life expectancy and they have to be replaced. So that's all done through our contractor as part of VDOT's cost. The current cost for obtaining a transponder is a minimum prepaid toll of $35 plus a $25 security deposit. That security deposit, however, is waived if the customer chooses auto replenishment through a checking or savings account with a credit card backup. Important to note that 92% of all accounts today are set up to have auto replenish. Looking to the future, we see tremendous growth happening in the EasyPass arena within the Commonwealth. We have 3 new facilities scheduled to come online before the end of the calendar year. You see those listed below: Jordan Bridge, Downtown Midtown Tunnel, and the 495 Express Lanes. And to all 3 of these facilities will be all electronic tolling. There will be no toll booths to collect cash. With the activities coming from these additional facilities, we potentially could see a doubling in EasyPass accounts over the next several years. And in addition to the increased volume of accounts, we'll be introducing a new type of transponder called the EasyPass Flex or Hot Pass, which will be used to support the express lanes. What the new transponder does is allow you to identify yourself as an HOV-free rider versus a toll-paying Hot Lanes customer. To support this activity, we have really reached out to our partners to assess the anticipated volumes of accounts and transponders that will be needed to support these efforts. We've identified kind of a schedule of transponder needs over the next 12 months between now and March of 2013, and we've worked with the manufacturer to kind of place a tentative order to say this is the volumes of transponders we'll be needing over this next year. We're looking at moving over 200,000 standard transponders and equally as many of the new EasyPass Flex transponders. Distribution of these transponders or the acquisition of these transponders will necessitate an upfront cost to the Commonwealth of about $6 million in equipment that will get recovered over the life of the equipment. To distribute all the additional transponders, we've been looking at means of enhancing our existing distribution channels and thinking down the road in terms of additional customer service accessibility as we move down the road. As mentioned, we have 2 major facilities coming online this year, and in those areas we're looking at opportunities to expand or provide for additional walk-in centers, as well as we've been working with Department of Motor Vehicles to partner with them to be able to provide EasyPass services from within a DMV location. And then we're also looking to implement EasyPass on the go, which is a retail distribution program. EasyPass on the go is in place in several of the northern states. In essence, what it does is allows a retailer to be able to sell a prepackaged live transponder to a customer. We are working through air contractor Faneuil and their marketing firm to put this in place. They are in the midst of negotiations with the vendors today. What they have found thus far is that the most likely retailers to do this would be grocery, big box retailers, potentially drugstores. We are planning on track to have these arrangements finalized by the beginning of June, with the plans of having the transponders available for retail distribution at the beginning of July. Following with what we're doing with our current transponders, we are looking to not to sell the transponder. It would still remain VDOT property, and it would be the customer would be buying the transponder, well, obtaining the transponder by buying $35 in prepaid tolls. To encourage the customer to register their transponder, to set up their new account, we would limit the availability of the toll to $15 until the account is registered, and at that time, the remaining $20 of prepaid tolls would become available. By taking this approach, the retailer is not put in a position to where he has to capture any personal information related to the customer to set up the account. It's all about getting the transponder in the person's hands, and then the person then would, through the web, through the phone, through a walk-in center, would be able to then establish the account. And
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Miller.
So I go into Best Buy, and I say I need a transponder, and they hand me one, and I pay $35.
Yes, sir.
And I've got $15 on account.
$15
mm-hmm. on account. So I have your transponder. You don't know who I am. I've got $15 of prepaid. And then I walk down the street and I go to another Best Buy and I say, "Give me a transponder." How does that work?
Then you would have two. That's.
Okay, I won't ask any more questions.
I mean. Just to follow up on that,
my point is I get $15 worth of tolls without any accountability, and how do you control that from me doing that 50 times?
I think that the thing you have to remember is that you've paid $35 for that $15 worth of tolls.
Okay, so I'm paying you $35, because we didn't get into that part. So right. I pay the retailer $35.
Right. Correct.
But I only get $15. Okay.
Right. The remaining $20 becomes available once you register your account.
Follow up on that, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Is the Commonwealth losing money, making money, or breaking even on these deals? Who's making money? Is it costing us to operate the EasyPass, or is it coming?
Okay. If you take my next couple of slides, we'll answer your question. To support these increasing numbers, we've also doing some improvements within the back office. We are enhancing our computer network and beefing up the processing capabilities to support it. We are looking at, I talked about earlier having additional custom walk-in centers. We are making sure we have sufficient customer service support. Faneuil currently has 81 staff working on the EasyPass. So it is a fairly large operation, and those numbers will be increased as needed to provide the service.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Mr. Lawson, going back to the earlier question, mm-hmm. currently you pay $35 and a $25 deposit. Are you saying under the new program to be sold at big boxes and whatnot, that there would not be a $25 deposit?
Moving forward, we are looking to eliminate the deposit. Again, we mentioned 92% of our customers already have auto-replenish, so we feel that we're really can move away from that deposit strategy going forward.
One last question.
Yes.
I think I saw in here where the replenishment program would be a checking account or something with a credit card backup. The credit card backup. Right now, I don't think that's the way it works. I just have a primary credit card with them. There is no checking account involved.
Right. The incentive before was to use, if you use the checking account with a credit card backup, you would waive the deposit. You do not have to have a checking account connected to auto replenish. You can do it directly.
Account because there's no transaction fee.
Correct. The fees are cheaper.
You waive the deposit.
Mm-hmm.
So you could do it either way, but.
Correct.
Because some people don't have checking accounts, which is sort of.
Correct. In terms of cost, the annual operation of the customer service center is about $10 million a year. And it is intended to operate on a break-even basis. It's not a money-making operation, nor is it an operation to be subsidized by the Commonwealth. Currently, the cost associated with this operation is recovered through transaction fees. The fees today are based on a two-component fee. There's a fixed fee that it's computed every year. Currently, is just over 4 cents a transaction that is passed on to the toll facilities. And then there's a revenue fee of about just shy of 2% that's associated with the bank fees and the fees that we pay to the other interoperable agency, all the ETPAS agencies related to the volume of revenue. The fixed fee, just to kind of explain it, the components of the fixed fee include the cost of the customer service center, annual dues as part of EasyPass. We have a management consultant that helps support the activity, as well as we amortize the cost of the transponders that we purchased, as well as the back office operations, the toll system itself. And again, the revenue fees cover the transactional fees associated with the revenue. Looking to the future, some of the next steps we're looking to take. We're pushing hard to develop and implement the retail program. Again, we fully expect to have that in operation come July 1. We are also looking very hard at the need for additional walk-in centers in certain areas to support areas that need that. Again, as I mentioned earlier, our most rural location in Gloucester is the busiest of our customer service centers. So we have to keep that in mind as we are trying to place these things and look to the communities that may be more of that type. And then it's very important that we continue to work with our partnering facilities. We are planning to have presence, EasyPass presence at marketing events that they put on. We will look to have some temporary distribution locations as we get closer to the facilities coming on board, and we will support their marketing campaigns.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
John, quick question. I noticed you said it was $10 million that's the cost of the operation center, and you're charging a transaction fee to the tolling facilities?
That's correct.
That's the contractor operating the tolling facilities?
Correct.
Do they have that on top of the tolls, or are they just pulling that out of the tolls?
In the existing facilities today, that is all part of their toll. It comes out of the toll. It's not an addition to.
Okay. There's $5 billion being collected total. Did I remember that correctly?
The five billion is EasyPass network, all 24 agencies, not just.
What is the total operating cost? I know $10 million is more than that. Where is it? What's the total operating cost to get that $5 billion?
I would not know that. That there's 24 different agencies that participate, in 14 different states, of which we're just one of the 24.
Okay, but I'm talking about just the state of Virginia. I'm not worried about Florida.
No, these are the EasyPass. If I go back here, See, all the purple states make up the EasyPass network. And that's the area that generates
$5 billion. I'm not talking about other states. I'm just talking about what it costs to operate the state.
$10 billion. $10 million is VDOT's operating cost, which generates about $200 million in revenue. Collects about $200 million in revenue.
Chairman.
Yes, I'm sorry.
Just a comment. And then a couple of questions. I suspect the utilization rate is going to vary by facility, because I can tell you the Chesapeake Bay Bridge Tunnel, it's a much higher penetration. Probably over 60% of the people who use the facility use EasyPass, a lot of them coming from the north. And on the transaction fees, I know you just answered that it was inclusive of the toll. But is that the fee that the toll operator will pay to you? In other words, there are additional fees that he has charged over and above that for transaction for the banks processing that.
Well, that was the two components of the transaction fee. Right.
So, on that. And the final thing I would put out is that we're expecting at the Chesapeake Bay Bridge Tunnel a fairly increase in traffic because of preponderance of new transponders are going to be through the area. And if there's a way that we could participate and help in the marketing, because we're already doing it, throw that up there because I know you got to get them out there, and we've already got a network developed.
And if I could just add, you asked a question about the penetration. For the Commonwealth, all facilities, we are at about 65%.
Yeah.
The highest ones are, like, I think Greenway is over 80%.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
Mr. Lawson.
Yes, sir.
For the prepaid transponders you can sell in the big box stores, now once the customer activates the account, does it remain prepaid, or do they have to go to a credit card or checking account or that point? Can they just go back to the big box and say, well, I'll give you, $20 in cash towards the tolls?
When they establish the account, we hope they will set it up to auto replenish with a credit card. But they do not have to do that. Again, we have about 8% of our accounts today they manually replenish. You would not be able to do that at the big box store, though. You would have to do the account maintenance, per se, at a walk-in center, or either online or by phone.
So really, the $15 is really a one-time shot, and until they get the account activated.
Correct. The big box store, though, again, the EasyPass on your Go program is purely to facilitate distribution. We will not handle customer service or any account maintenance.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Mr. Lawson, a couple of questions. I think early in your presentation you suggested 68% of the transactions are now occurring online.
That's it.
Correct.
Do you have a breakdown of... or do you know what the purchase of the new transponders or not the purchase of the deposit and whatnot, what percentage of that kind of activity is happening online versus a walk-in?
Well, again, the 68% number I used earlier was new account setups.
Oh, it is. Okay.
68% of new accounts are set up online.
Second question, as you get closer to the tolling of Interstate 95, have you considered strategies that will sell at retail level close to the border, close to the North Carolina border, as most of that traffic will not be familiar, not likely to be customers of EasyPass ABC?
We have not at this point, but as we continue to develop the tolling program for 95, we will certainly be looking at that those opportunities.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Regarding the waiver of the $25 fee and replenishment, clearly the checking account or credit card does nothing to prevent loss or theft. Am I correct that the real purpose of that is you simply take the $25 once it's lost out of it? Then why do you need both checking and credit card? Can you just take it as easily from one?
In terms of today, the reason we had asked for the the checking to be the primary is that it's a lower transactional fee cost. It's much cheaper to process than it is to the credit card fees. And then having the credit card as a secondary just gives us an additional security or protection that we'd be able to collect funds.
Okay. Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Just a quick question. When you travel around Europe on the roads that have tolls, the big roads, they have their form of Easy Pass, but also you can just pull out a Visa card and stick it in there. There's no attendant. And you have that infrastructure that's already there with the banks, and it worked fine. Why don't we do something like that? It makes it easier for the consumer. Do we have that type of thing? Have we thought of that?
This really gets to a facility-specific question. You know, obviously we're moving to all electronic open roads that you don't slow down to have to pay a toll, you know, to reduce congestion purposes, you just keep traffic flowing. But we do have, and I know on Pocahontas at least, I'm not sure what other facilities, they do have unmanned booths at ramps where you can swipe a credit card. So, I mean, we do have the technology to allow that to take place, but not from a mainline, all-electronic perspective.
It makes it easier for the consumer who may not have all these devices, especially for tourists. And we have a $19 to $20 billion tourism industry. They're not going to have all these little devices, I don't think. But in Europe, it works fine. They have lanes where you can just go right through. Mm-hmm. And then they have a couple lanes, or maybe one, where you can just put your credit card in and go to. I didn't see any backup. This is in Italy or France or any of the places.
To make a comment on that, we did an exhaustive study of the Chesapeake Bay Bridge Tunnel, and it's about a third more in transaction costs for the credit card. And that's why we're offering them, but we don't market them, because we're waiting to see the number of transponders that are going to be now proliferate across the state because of that. But it is about a third more expensive to accept the credit card versus the transaction fee on the transponder.
Okay. I think the next two presentations will help fill you in a little bit about what's...
Okay. Just Lawson, before you go, you're not going to ask us. I mean, so how many transponders are we estimating we're going to have to issue in the next year?
We over the next 12 months, we would anticipate issuing about 400,000 transponders, which will be a combination of new facilities and just our normal replacements.
So how many have been how many do we have currently registered in the state?
We currently have 900,000 transponders.
So we're going to look like essentially a 50% increase in just a year.
So we'll probably go from 9 to 1.2 billion, let's say, because of the new switch outs.
And even with that 900,000 existing, we're still going to have to, because of the HOT stuff, the express lanes, people are going to be coming in and potentially swapping out for the new switchboard.
That's correct.
Okay. Now my issue is, who do we have a contract with right now to do retail?
There's no one on contract today to do retail.
How are we going to get this done in the next 6 months?
We are... As I explained, we are working through our contractor manual. We are on track to have our retail arrangements in place by the beginning of June, to have retail functioning beginning of July.
So we have actually reached out and met with how many different retailers?
I don't have those details, sir.
I mean, we're going to have to have...
All right. Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Mr. Miller.
There's enough angst about the whole issue to start with, and if we don't execute when it starts, I share your...
Yeah.
It's going to be a very difficult situation. So I trust the secretary and the commissioner and the staff, but...
June is way too late. I mean, then we're looking at potentially midtown, downtown, September, October. I just...
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
John, if someone, let's just say in the state of Virginia, doesn't travel that much and they're going to take the family on vacation, do they have to... How do they go about getting a transponder? I mean, are they, how easy is that going to be for them to pick up one or find one or whatever? Maybe it's very simple, I don't know. I'm just trying to figure that out. It's not something that's daily commute or anything like that. It's a one-time deal. They take the family to Kings Dominion or someplace.
You're just
going to
go through it?
Well, that's, I think it becomes very much a facility-specific question. You know, what road is it that they will they be needing to use? You know, existing facilities today have cash options where they can pay toll, you know, at a toll plaza. The new facilities coming online, you know, if you don't have a transponder, they do have alternate means that they will toll you through an invoicing process, and I think you'll hear some of that from the next two presentations. So it's not like you can't use the road unless you have the transponder, you know.
So who are we, I mean, this is really, I mean, I'll continue to press you guys on this. I'm very concerned that we don't necessarily have these contracts in place and we don't have a true outreach and marketing plan and getting these things sold. What do we need to do to shake this loose?
Sir, I believe it is fully underway.
We're in March, and you don't have a single contract with a single retailer.
Joe, Mr. Chairman, we had a meeting the other day with all of the operators, and I'm pretty convinced that we have a plan to get the retail operations in place. There was a concern raised that the negotiations could take longer than we anticipated, but at this point, we believe we're on track to make it have those vendors online in June. They're in the negotiations with the vendors right now. We also are looking at ways to mitigate the issues that we could have. Number one, we do have citizens can come online to get their transponders. 60-some% of all people use online to get their transponders. Number two, we are working with identifying other locations that we can establish a physical presence to distribute transponders so that people can walk in and purchase them. We're also working with DMV, and we are working with DMV to be able to sell transponders in the DMV facilities. So we're looking at those issues as ways to mitigate any problems that we have with retail. I think retail is one component of how we distribute transponders and not the only way to distribute them. So I do believe that we have a process in place that will mitigate some of the concerns in issuing transponders, but it will be a significant challenge for us to get those many transponders out to citizens, but we are working aggressively on getting the retail operation in place.
So April, I'd like to have a report back here next April. I mean this April, I want you to come in here and tell me where we are, how you progress from this meeting to the next meeting. In fact, every month, I want reports to the CTB about where we are. Because, I mean, to go back to what Mr. Miller said, I mean, if we don't get this right from the get-go, you know, it is going to be a true black mark on the entire program.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Mr. Speaker.
What is our role as CTB in this? Is it just to approve the final contract?
No, this is more of a, we get the opportunity to beat up.
Just yell at
them? Yeah. Nothing personal. Yeah. Honestly, at this point, I mean, this is a I'm going to call it ministerial action. We already have the policy. So this is really implementing what's already been, you know, obviously the overall program.
Mr. Chairman,
Yes.
I just want to reiterate, I still don't see why we just don't use the private sector. We said use the Visa cards. I mean, the banks do all the infrastructure. They're there. They do that all the time. And we're setting up a separate big bureaucracy with our own little devices that people may or may not buy. So I just don't understand it all.
It's a that's the facility decision, not ours to make them use it.
We're giving them the money, though, aren't we? Can't we kind of nudge them a little bit?
Well, this is, I mean, in fact, the last 2 years ago when we were looking, I mean, we're caught up, I mean, there's two issues, Mr. Rich, and I think the first one is this issue on the credit cards is a very good one. The problem is that the cost of a credit card, because you have to pay those transaction fees. I mean, the facility pays it, and that's, so then it drives up the cost even more. So it is the issue of the facility making that decision as to whether to accept credit cards. The biggest thing I will tell you to you that, you know, the federal government is pushing us to do open, as much open road tolling as possible so that we don't have the congestion points at the toll booths. The other thing, though, is there is a good thing and bad thing about having EasyPass. I mean, the good thing is it's convenient. It's now accepted in so many different states. The bad news is that, you know, it's difficult for us to change things because it's essentially to keep that thing uniform and to be interoperable up and down the East Coast. It means that we have to, quote-unquote, maybe surrender a certain control over even more advanced technology. I mean, actually now the technology is such that, I mean, in different parts of the world, you don't even have a transponder anymore. You just have something in your car that just reads, actually can read your registration and your license and everything else as you drive. I mean, it's gotten that advanced, but... This is an issue, but the issue on the cost. I mean, is it about a third?
It's about a third. Which is, now we have an average toll of $12, and it's about a third more than after the harvest credit card. Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
I think Mr. Rich though has a point. In fact, we're all caught between these generations of technology as we go forward. But also, I would suggest to Mr. Rich, we're caught in our own organizational structure, which has set these toll facilities up one at a time. I know the administration's discussion of whether or not to have a central tolling authority, part of that was based on the ability to reconcile differences and put us on the same footing regardless of where the facility was and so forth. So you're right. In terms of technology and the information, credit card companies have it. You're more likely to update your address with them than with VDOT or anybody else. I mean, it's something that you do on a monthly basis. The transaction, on the other hand, for a transponder is a one-time, it's a $35 transaction when you renew one time as opposed to a series of small transactions each time you move through a booth, so you're right about efficiencies. On the other hand, at some point automobiles will tell the toll facility who it is, and it'll all be built in. I mean, these things are all coming, so it is a little bit inconvenient, a little bit inefficient at times.
Mr. Chairman,
but I think we're all discovering that tolls are, people are paying attention now a little bit more.
There you go.
Tolls are.
I don't want to belabor the point, but overseas I did not find the cost prohibitive, and there were no backups with this system, this dual system of EasyPass and credit cards. But anyhow.
Okay, 495 Express Lanes. Ms. Almet.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board, Mr. Commissioner. My name is Jennifer Ahmet, and I'm with the investor and long-term operator on the Express Lanes project, Transurban. And it's really my pleasure to be here along with VDOT to talk to you a little bit about our communications and public education efforts that is underway in advance of the opening of the Express Lanes later this year. A bit of housekeeping to start off. For those of you not aware, we have changed the name of the project. It used to be the Capital Beltway Hot Lanes Project. It's now called 495 Express Lanes, consistent with federal guidelines. A quick refresher on the project for those of you who are not spending time sitting in congestion on the Beltway right now. We are building four new lanes on the Capitol Beltway between the Springfield Interchange and just north of the Dulles Toll Road. Those lanes will be high occupancy toll lanes that will use dynamic toll pricing to provide travelers with a faster and more predictable trip on the Capitol Beltway. The express lanes will be open to HOV3 and to both private and public buses free of charge, and they will also be available to other customers who choose to pay a toll from time to time when they want that faster, more predictable trip. Experience on other hot lanes across the country is that toll-paying customers tend to use the lanes maybe a couple of times a week when they really need them. I'm very pleased to report the construction of the facility is going extraordinarily well. We have an unparalleled safety record. It's on time, it's on budget, and on schedule to be able to open at the end of this year. To put a little context around the communications and marketing program, every element of the program that you'll see today is based on 5 years of research with our customers and with travelers in the Northern Virginia region. We've had a robust communications program in partnership with VDOT around this project for more than 5 years now and have done both formal qualitative and quantitative research studies as well as countless opportunities for informal interaction with our customers through what has been more than 750 community-based meetings to provide the public information around these projects. So customers have really had an opportunity to inform this communications program. Give you a quick snapshot of the program overview and the wheel here. The objectives of this program are quite simple. With the express lanes opening this year, you're going to see changing traffic patterns in the Northern Virginia region. You'll see a new travel tool that's really not in place in the region or anywhere in Virginia. Travelers won't be familiar with how the hot lanes will work or how the express lanes will work, what the signage will say. So first and foremost, our task here is to educate the traveling public so they'll know what to expect. Second, we've got to get them equipped, and as we've discussed this morning, that means getting an Easy Pass or the new Easy Pass Flex for carpools in travelers' vehicles on the Capitol Beltway. And finally, we want travelers in Northern Virginia to get excited and motivated to use this new travel option as part of their commutes, whether that means being prepared to use the toll option as a backup plan when they need to be somewhere on time, or to be thinking about carpooling and finding ways to take advantage of those new travel options as well. If we move down the wheel here, I'll just give you a quick tidbit of some of the strategies that will be underway throughout 2012 to prepare the traveling public to use the facility. First, destination-based. We're taking our program to the places that we know our customers go to work every day. That means hosting major employment events at places like SAIC, which Mr. Goulmay has been a fantastic partner for us, and also having a very strong presence at Tysons Corner Center, where we know that more than 26 million of our customers shop and eat every day, or every year. So the big part of our program is going to where our customers are. Pervasive coverage. Our program will include extensive paid advertising in outlets like the Washington Post and WTOP. We'll also be using some non-traditional tools. We actually have a fleet of nearly 100 trucks, delivery trucks that are already traveling the Beltway corridor that we'll wrap and brand with ExpressLanes.com website. So our travelers will get information on how they can get the lanes. If you get gas in Tysons Corner in the morning, you'll see our information actually at the pump, so you'll know where you can get information on the lanes and how to get an Easy Pass and be prepared to use the road. Speaking of Easy Pass, as John mentioned, we're working in partnership with VDOT on what will be an extensive Easy Pass incentive and promotion program starting in May of this year. That program will intensify throughout the year, and the aim of it, particularly in the early days, is to get as many customers to get an Easy Pass early as we possibly can to help VDOT manage that rush at the end of the year. We know that people pay their taxes on April 15th. They do their Christmas shopping on Christmas Eve. We're realistic and want to have plans in place to deal with procrastinators, but we also want to provide as many incentives as possible for people to get that Easy Pass early. In our case, we're looking at programs like offering toll credits for those who sign up early and even looking at a car giveaway to try to incentivize travelers to get an Easy Pass in their vehicle. You cannot open a toll road today in 2012 without tweeting it, so we will have an extensive digital brand program as part of this program, obviously. The website will be the anchor of every strategy that we use. We'll have Facebook, Twitter, and really make every effort to drive people to our website and, of course, to VDOT's website to sign up for their Easy Pass. of Transurban opens has opened a lot of toll roads, and I'll tell you, despite best laid plans, there are always bumps in the road in the early days, and we are very realistic about that, and we'll have a plan in place for rapid response for our customers, for travelers in the region, and for other key stakeholders. So we ensure in those early days, as the region is making that transition, we are prepared to quickly meet customer needs and make that go as smoothly for the region as possible. Moving into stakeholder management, presentations today are as an example of the kind of stakeholder engagement program that's always been around this project and will continue as we partner with our law enforcement partners, elected officials, and others in the region in opening the express lanes. And finally, last and actually not least, is our special user group program. There is a whole spectrum of travelers on the Beltway, from taxi cabs, federal law enforcement officers, small delivery trucks, and of course our priority carpool and transit customers. So we have targeted marketing programs at all of those various customers to understand that they know the rules of the road. Those kinds of programs include working with the American Motorcycle Association, so they're pushing information out to their constituents and they know what they need to do to use the express lanes. And we had a fantastic meeting just last week. The Department of Rail and Public Transportation was kind enough to co-host a meeting with us with every major transit operator in the Washington, D.C. region, so that now, 9 months out, we're ensuring whether you have 1,000 vehicles in your fleet or one vehicle in your fleet, you have the information you need and have time to prepare to be able to utilize the new lanes. And, of course, as part of this program, safety will be a core element of every message that we have, every strategy, every program, every event. Safety will dominate. Give you a sense of the timing for the year. The road is now expected to open on time in December of this year. You'll see we have a number of major elements of the program that are already underway, but a few highlights. Our EasyPass incentive program for early adopters, including the car giveaway, is expected to begin in the May timeframe. If you're in the Northern Virginia region at any festival, fair, or event, we'll be out there to equip you with an EasyPass this summer. We also have a paid advertising program, so you really start seeing this on the airwaves about the September time frame, and that will intensify through the end of the year and after the lanes open. You see the other elements of the program underway throughout 2012.
So where do the little wind-up cars fall under?
The little wind-up cars, Mr. Chairman, you'll embarrass me now because I didn't bring them for this group, but most of the people that work at the Virginia Department of Transportation have wind-up express lanes cars on their desks. And we've done that with some of our key stakeholders to remind people that this express lane is not hot lanes and to keep us top of mind in your planning. So I'll have to bring them back for the Commonwealth Transportation Board as well.
The governor liked his.
Okay, go ahead.
I gave it to her.
To give you a sample of some of that breakthrough creative, other than the small wind-up cars, you'll see some of the sample creative there. I mean, we have very busy commuters in Northern Virginia, so we're taking a very bold approach and helping people think outside the box. It's time to change lanes is our tagline. You'll see that everywhere in Northern Virginia this year. Customer-friendly tools. It's really interesting, all the research that we've done in and around these lanes. One of the things that we know resonates most with travelers in Northern Virginia is they want some sense of control. Controlling something in this big, massive, congested area. So you'll see that all of our tools are very centered around taking control of your commute and taking control of your travel. So we have very consumer-friendly tools, 495expresslanes.com. You can welcome to go on and check them out for yourself where people can start planning their trip. They can get used to seeing the signage and what that's like. They can become familiar with the payment methods, familiar with the new entry and exit points on the express lanes. So we're a user-friendly, customer-friendly approach. You see our delivery trucks there. We are launching this road in the middle of a major national election. My advertising team loves that, but it's a very crowded space. So again, we're looking at very creative opportunities to break through that, whether you're on the road or sitting at home, watching, reading the newspaper or listening to the radio in your car, we'll try to grab you. Examples of some destination-based marketing in Tysons Corner Center, a great partner for us. Have a lot of presence in Tysons Corner Center this year.
I'm sorry. I like the truck, but so why aren't we seeing signs going up on the construction site?
You'll see them actually go up this week on the construction site.
You will have, so as all the people are parked on the Beltway right now, we'll be able to see them.
We will. We're working with VDOT, and VDOT's been a very supportive partner on this front. We are, because we're dealing with an interstate highway, you know, there's always a balance in making sure that we promote the safest traveling conditions possible and also get driver information out there. And that's always a tricky balance. For us, distracted driving is our signature safety issue, so we don't want to put anything out there that would distract people. But we're working with VDOT to really thread that needle and find opportunities, first in the construction zone, adjacent to the Beltway, places where we can put on-road signage. We have 200,000 vehicles going across the Beltway every day. What a great place to advertise to them. But we're, again, striking that balance to make sure we do that in a safe and responsible way on an interstate highway.
So where is that then?
The signs are going up in the construction site right now. Okay. You'll see all the construction vehicles have expresslanes.com on them. The signs are going up in the construction zone. And Mr. Secretary, we're working with your team on the next steps in terms of going a little bit farther in terms of signage on the Beltway, utilizing DMS and other tools to be able to get that information out there. I have to make a note here because, particularly with Director Drake here, the Department of Rail and Public Transportation and all of the TDM agencies at the local level in Northern Virginia have just been fantastic partners in helping us get information to particularly the carpool community, the vanpool community, and others. And so what we've tried to do is make, you know, there's nobody better at communicating to these constituencies and these groups. So what we've done is try to prepare tools for them to make it as easy as possible for them to get that information out. We have microsites available for these professionals where they can go on, they can download web copy, download ads, put their brand on them, shoot them out, and their constituents can get that information in a way they're used to getting it. So it's been a very effective tool for us, and appreciate that partnership with DRPT. Again, just to give you a little feel for the ground game, 750 community-based meetings associated with the 495 Express Lanes over the last 5 years. It's a program that's been very effective for us to be in a very personal, hands-on role with our customers and our communities, and we'll continue that throughout this year. Measuring success, very research-oriented organization, and it's important for us as well to ensure throughout 2012 that the strategies that we have out there are indeed reaching customers and meeting their information needs. So we're going to measure the success of this program in two distinct ways. The first is a customer engagement metric. We're targeting 400,000 customer engagements between now and March 2013. That's measured by website visits, attendance at our events, the results from ongoing benchmarking survey that we'll be doing throughout the year to ensure that we're reaching the traveling public with our message. The second metric that obviously you'll be following as well along with us this year is the uptake of EasyPass. We are targeting 100,000 net new EasyPass in the Northern Virginia region between now and March of 2013, and we'll continue to measure and track against that. If we're not getting that penetration, we'll be able to be flexible and move our strategies so that we are seeing that uptake on EasyPass.
I'm sorry, before you go back to that slide, please. All right, so you're essentially saying you're getting out to 400,000 people in order to be able to have 100,000.
That's right. There's really two goals associated with the 400,000 mark. We do have a need to get EasyPass in vehicles. We have about a 50% penetration among Beltway travelers right now, so that's a very critical goal for us. But we also have a need for all of the traveling public, including the Hot Lanes customers, our Express Lanes customers, to inform them and make sure they understand how to use the road as well. So we're measuring both.
But to go back, I mean, this whole presentation is about outreach. You aren't selling the transponders.
We are not. We're working with
pointing them to who?
That's right. The relationship between the Express Lanes and EasyPass is similar to Macy's and Visa. EasyPass is a payment method that you use to buy our product. And so we are partnering with VDOT to do everything we can to promote EasyPass, but we actually send people through our tools to VDOT's website for them to get their EasyPass, and VDOT actually manages that customer relationship.
So why haven't you all tried to become can you become a retailer?
We're exploring that option with VDOT right now.
Is that another one of these contracts we'll get in June?
Well, we already have a robust contract in place with the Commonwealth, so that's we have a solid foundation there. But we are exploring that with VDOT right now, the possibility of whether or not we may be able to play, at least in the short term, a retail support role to help get EasyPass out the door. I think we're aligned in making sure that we're doing everything we can to make it convenient for people to get an EasyPass.
Because at the end of the day, we're not doing any marketing. Is that right? I mean, we really aren't doing marketing. They're the ones doing
the
marketing.
They're primarily doing the marketing. We will have some marketing support. But.
So what needs to happen for you? Since you're doing the marketing already, what needs to happen to have you become a retailer?
Well, we would need to work with VDOT so that we have an easy pass on the go product that we could use. For instance, if we are in Mr. Coulomb's lobby at SAIC on a major commuter transportation fair, and we have customers that come up and want to get an easy pass, we would want to work out arrangements so we have an easy pass in a package that they could take and then register online and then be ready to go. And again, we just had a great discussion just a few days ago with VDOT on how we might be able to partner with them to play that role if necessary. But we've been assured that their retail program is moving forward quickly, and we hope that that will address that need. But we are certainly able to support in being a retailer if that's something that we can do.
Well, I mean, again, you're showing pictures of being out and about it. Public places, and I mean, sort of makes sense since you're putting the money out to make this happen, the outreach. Why can't they do the transponders as well?
Well, we certainly are working with them in partnership to do that. Whether that means the VDOT personnel is there to offer the easy pass, whether it means we have them in a package, we're working through that now and want to make it as convenient as possible. But again, we're the retailer, Macy's to Visa. So we've partnered with VDOT and reassured that they are working with us to try to make it convenient.
Ms. Coulomb.
If I may, let me ask the commissioner. So the contractual relationship is actually with VDOT for the transponder?
With the customer. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. It's not with the individual toll facility.
That's correct.
So you have individual agreements with the toll facilities that are part of the existing EasyPass program already?
Yes.
Okay.
With the facilities, yes.
Gotcha. Because there's only one, right? So we are the representative. VDOT is the representative for EasyPass for the whole state.
For the whole state, which is somewhat unique. Many other states, it's the actual toll facility operator, each facility represents themselves at the EasyPass meetings. But when Virginia did it right, when they first started EasyPass, it was supposed to be the state belonging to EasyPass, and you pay one fee.
Yeah.
Virginia's about the only state that does that. And they wanted us to change, and we refused to change because the founding principle of EasyPass was to have one state, one voice, and representing the Commonwealth for EasyPass, and we are doing that.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
Secretary.
Could you, maybe the Commissioner, just review again the time sequence here in terms of when do these transponders get into the public's hands? When do they have to be on the market to where somebody can buy them? He's telling, is it September? Because these are opening at the end of the year, right?
That's correct. And our actual EasyPass incentive promotion program will begin in mid-May.
Mid-May,
correct. And right now, the early focus of that program.
I'm putting a transponder in somebody's car, to put it in my car. When is that going to happen?
Customers need to have that EasyPass in their vehicle by December.
By December.
But you already, if you have your existing one, it's... You can use it.
That's
but,
right.
But a new customer.
Right.
That's
a new
right.
customer and or if you are going to use them for the HOV3,
right.
Then you'll have to have the new switchable.
That's right. We have a little different dynamic in that we have everyone is required to have an EasyPass. Either have a standard EasyPass, if you have one today, you can use it, or if you're a carpooler, you need an EasyPass Flex that will be available this summer.
One other question, Mr. Secretary. During your outreach, have you been queried about the hot lanes extending from the Woodrow Wilson Bridge? Because I get people asking me from time to time, because of all the work being done everywhere in the Beltway, there's a thought group out there that thinks it's starting at the Wilson Bridge. Does that happen?
Yeah, we get that a lot, actually, with the Telegraph Road project.
I don't know if that, I just asked that question because people are asking it. I think you have to make that clear, which it looks like you're doing in your print and your website, that they start at Springfield and go to Eisenhower.
You're right. You were reminded every day. We talked to a gentleman yesterday who travels from Great Falls to over the Woodrow Wilson Bridge every day, and he wasn't aware of what was going on with the construction. And so we are reminded that we have a big education effort ahead of us, and that's why we're making quite a substantial investment to get out there with that information.
Because they think they're seamless. You know, they see all the construction going, completing from the Wilson Bridge project and what you're doing, and they don't see the difference. They think that's all one big project.
I agree.
Well, then also add to it, I mean, the Wilson Bridge, in fact, there's another lawsuit involving a project on the Wilson Bridge, and one of the issues on that one was the fact that, you know, the Wilson Bridge is quote unquote overbuilt. It has the quote unquote express lanes built into it with the anticipation at some point it was going to be HOB or HOT and or transit was going to run across it. So we got sued there because I was on the TPB then, because it was saying it was too high of a price. It was a boatload cheaper to build those lanes now than it was to then try to retrofit it at a future date. So, yes.
While we're talking about timing, and I know we're concerned about execution, do we have any contractual timelines we have to make to the facilities? Or is this just, we're concerned. We want to execute because I think Mr. Moore is exactly right, but I want to make sure we don't have any, is it more than, I mean, do we have contractual obligations?
John, as you know, there's a line item in there on that. So it doesn't seem that we have a contractual.
What I've read, I haven't seen it, but it looks like it's, they're going to collect money, they got to have it going. And so it seemed like reasonable. So if you could just verify that, I think that would be good to have.
So, okay.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Oh, yes, myself.
You know, I guess, you know, right now you could still go through the existing network and buy a transponder, you know, but the question is, when will the switchable ones be ready for adjustment?
Yes.
You know, through the existing network.
John, can I get John to address that one, that question?
The new switchable tag is currently being produced and will be available beginning of July for distribution.
What was that? Was that another June?
No, I said July, sir.
All right, so we need an update on that.
Certainly.
Make sure we're still on that.
So, okay. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Ms. Hellman. So I want to make sure we all understand. So we have told our transponder folks to have the potential for 400,000 easy passes ready to go. That's not a problem.
To this line, and they'll get to this.
You sure? You got that in writing? Have you gone to the warehouses? Have you gone out there and touched them and looked at them?
Probably measured on a weekly basis. That's the thing.
You don't have to touch them, look at them. I'll let you like.
Sir, we, as I mentioned, we have just given CAPS, who is the manufacturer of the transponders, a required order supply over the next 12 months to cover the volumes that we've anticipated needing, and they have committed to meeting those volumes.
So, and Mr. Chairman, I just want you to know that PDOT was working very hard with the EasyPass group to make these switchable transponders work. In fact, it was through our contracts that we were able to even test these types of transponders and work getting these things done. So we have been really aggressively pushing to get these new types of transponders done and tested. through some of our contracts with NVDOT to make this happen. So we have not been sitting on the sideline. We have been aggressively pushing these, and now we understand they are ready. So we've done all the testing. They meet all the specs, and we're now have an order in.
Well, we have placed the order. They're finalizing the testing now. And I'll have to say that Transurban has been very instrumental in working with us in designing and working through the testing process.
I'll just add before I close that in the case of the express lanes, the EasyPass transponder system is really, requiring that mandatory EasyPass is really critical to our enforcement regime, which is important on that facility because we do have HOV and transit customers who will rely on that facility. So being able to keep those violators out and well below what we've seen on other HOV facilities is a key priority for us. And customers may pay with a credit card on our system if they've missed a toll, but because we are fully electronic tolling, open road tolling, people will be entering our facility at 55 miles an hour. So they won't be able to pay with a credit card on road, but if they've missed a toll and they want to pay that toll online, they can certainly do so with a credit card. Just to conclude, the bottom line is, Transurban and VDOT have put a tremendous amount of work and funding in place to be able to make this project a reality. But it won't be a success unless our customers are informed, they're equipped, and they're motivated to use the facility. So this is a part of the program in advance of the opening that we, along with VDOT, are taking very seriously, and it's an important investment for us. We think it's a robust program, a measurable program, and hope you'll see the fruits of that program throughout 2012 and into 2013. We do have close coordination underway with DRBT, VDOT, our local partners, and actually now a dialogue as well with some of the other major projects in other parts of the state, so we can share information and lessons learned with those partners as well. And, of course, convenient access to EasyPass when that retail program is available. We look forward to that. Convenient access to EasyPass online and in person, we think, is a critical part of this effort. Thank you for your time and offer to any questions.
Yeah. One quickie. In your system, if a customer misses a toll and has to pay by a credit card, is there a penalty attached to that payment?
They'll have to pay a fee. Again, we're a mandatory EasyPass system, so you'll need to have an EasyPass, but if you forgot your EasyPass and you go online, for a small admin fee, you can conveniently pay your toll online.
It's a small admin fee.
We just want your toll and the cost to collect that toll.
Mr. Chairman. Mr. Miller.
Ms. Allman, do you know what the default rate is, or the, I won't say the default, let me use two different questions. How many people, what's the percentage of people that drive through, whether it's the hot lanes or whatever tolling facility you're operating, that drive through and don't have a transponder and they get their picture taken, what's that percent? Then what percent of that group you never get the money from?
Well, I defer to Mr. Lawson to talk about, VDOT facilities statewide and what their leakage rates
I'm
are.
I'm asking you what Transurban's experience is. I heard from Macquarie years ago what their experience was.
I'm interested
in your experience.
Yeah, this is a very important priority for us to limit that leakage. And on Transurban's assets in other parts of the world, we maintain that leakage rate well below 5%. We believe that the leakage rate on Beltway in the early days will be well below 5% of the
and
customers.
Does the 5% include your cost of collection?
That 5% of the customers who use the facility, that revenue, 5% of that revenue is leakage.
I understand that, but there's a cost to collect the revenue that's leaking.
Yep, okay? That is not included in that number.
Doesn't include that cost.
No.
And actually,
Macquarie told me that their leakage rate was 20-something.
For where? I'm sorry.
That was their experience. Was 20-something. That was before, that wasn't the ultimate leakage rate. That was the beginning leakage rate.
Right.
Meaning the amount of people that drove through that didn't pay the toll and had the pictures taken. And they were actually trying to get some laws changed in Virginia that would allow them to collect easier because it's hard to collect. So I was just interested in
it's an ongoing struggle for any manager of a toll road. And I think what you'll find is a long-term operator, as glamorous as that is, Transurban, we operate toll roads for a living. That's what we do. And so, enforcement is a big part of our internal expertise. And I'll tell you, in even developing the strategy with VDOT on how people would pay the toll in the first place on the express lanes. Enforcement was the foundation of all of those, that planning. So requiring that mandatory easy pass, all of those have been designed to try to minimize the leakage on the facility. And that's important for us from a revenue perspective, but it also has a very important public policy objective because unlike a traditional toll road, you know, we have an HOV and transit customer base that depend on that road as well.
Which is going to make the enforcement interesting because it's you're going to have to enforce whether they got if they have the flip on for HOV3 for free.
At the hotline, right.
That's right.
I would be interested, Mr. Chairman, in sort of knowing what our experience is and what we project going forward, whether it's Transurban that's operating it or whether it's the Hotlands or wherever it is on our toll facilities, what the ultimate, what I'll call the ultimate leakage rate is, which would include the cost of collection. Because obviously the cost of collection is part of the whole issue. You have higher costs. You know, if your cost is 7 times your leakage rate, then your true leakage rate is different.
Yeah.
And so what, at the end of the day, do we get 80, do we get 85, do we get 90 after adding in cost of collections? That would be an interesting number.
And we have those numbers, because actually in developing some of the comprehensive agreements, you know, obviously the better the enforcement rate, the less, quote unquote, the risk. So that's one of the issues is always to make sure that the enforcement.
And of course, that doesn't in any way take out the external costs or factor in the external costs like courts and bailiffs and people and fines, you know, all that.
You know, Steph, a good portion of our actual operations costs are aimed at enforcement. In express lanes, it's state troopers, their vehicles, the technology in their vehicles, all of those things as well.
Yeah, how many are you hiring? How many will you be funding, state troopers?
Well, it's about an easy question that will vary on the 495 express lanes as needed. So in terms of how many vehicles will be out there in a given day, so we'll have some days that we'll have more vehicles out there than others. But the project is funding extensive state police troopers, their vehicles, their shields, everything associated with enforcement of the lane.
I thought there was actually a number that you were providing funds for.
I'll have to check on that, but, you know.
Is there actually... I know that they put the slots up in Northern Virginia that you all are paying.
Yeah, we're operating a little bit differently than the Greenway in that we won't have the state troopers that advise us that we won't have a dedicated staff of state troopers. So Mr. Smith won't be on our facility every day like they've done on other roads. So we'll swap, you know, people in and out. But there are new positions associated with express lanes and certainly can get you that number.
Any other questions? Sama, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Very disappointed you didn't bring any wind-up cars for the CTC members. The next presentation is on some project called Downtown Tunnel. Who we got? Mr. Woodsmall?
John. Thank you, Mr. Secretary, Commissioner, Board members, for this opportunity to speak to you about the Elizabeth River Crossings and our partnership with VDOT for the Downtown Tunnel, Midtown Tunnel, and the MLK Extension Project. As the Secretary mentioned, my name is Greg Woodsmall. I am the interim CEO for Elizabeth River Crossings, and I have, for the past 10 years, have extensive experience here in Virginia with the operations and maintenance of roadways as well as the tolling of facilities. And specifically for the last 3 years, I've been part of the ERC development team for this specific project. Now we're pleased to be here today and have the opportunity to speak about this project and the progress with our partner VDOT and how we are planning for and preparing for the future. Okay, first of all, I'd like to just recap a little bit about where we are today and what the project includes. Now, the project includes the continued operations and maintenance for the downtown and the Midtown Tunnel. It also includes the construction of the new Midtown Tunnel, as well as the fire life and safety improvements to the existing tunnels. Also included is the extension of the MLK from London Boulevard to I-264, and the interchanges on the project in the Norfolk and Fort Smith area. Now, also, there is an annual subsidy to improve the bus service to the highest levels, and this will increase the frequency and the connectivity and will give commuters an alternative to driving. Benefits of the project are significant. Safety will be improved with the elimination of the two-lane traffic in the Midtown Tunnel. Fire life and safety improvements will be made to the existing tunnels. Emergency evacuation routes will be improved. And the extension of the MLK will provide a regional connectivity and provide choices for users between and an opportunity to select the use of either tunnel. Now, to the points of the slide here, as you're probably aware of, that we entered into a comprehensive agreement with VDOT back in December for this project. That agreement outlines the key business terms and the obligations we have, as well as the oversight and the ownership that VDOT retains. Key note in the terms of this contract is that it is consistent with the recommendation of the public process involving the independent review panel, as well as the recommendation from this board. Now, ERC, we are currently headquartered in Norfolk, and we're looking forward to co-locating with VDOT when the renovation is completed at the Penner's Point facility. Currently, our work largely focused on developing the deliverables that are required by the comprehensive agreement. And this is a necessary activity required to demonstrate thorough and responsible approach to the key activities that will enable us to begin tolling. Now also, we've been working on a number of other things, and that has to do with the tolling mobilization activities. There was an early works agreement that was developed that allowed us to proceed on this part of the project. To date, we've developed the design, the software, procured a number of the components of the system, have designed the actual civil works, and are preparing for the installation of the facility. From an operational and maintenance standpoint, we've been developing our operations and maintenance plans, our organizational policies, as well as our standard operating procedures. We've also, as a requirement of the CA, developed a tolling strategy and marketing plan, as well as a public information and communications plan. Those plans have been developed, submitted to VDOT for review, and we're currently revising those plans to reflect those comments. Now, as we go forward, there's a couple of key dates we need to keep in mind, and the first one of those dates is the financial close. And as we move forward, as announced last summer, tolling will start on the downtown and midtown tunnels third quarter of this year. In advance of the tolling, ERC will assume the responsibility for the operations and maintenance, as well as the continued 24/7 incident management response service for those facilities. Now, looking forward, in 2016, the MLK extension will be completed, and that facility will be tolled at that time. Now, as I mentioned before, we've been working collaboratively with VDOT and its partners, as well as our vendors and our providers, for the last 18 months. And I think you've heard in the last couple of presentations the need for this collaborative effort, and we certainly have gone down that path. As I mentioned earlier, there was an executed early works agreement that allowed us to progress with a number of the activities associated with the tolling system, and that also includes the acquisition and the fabrication of the actual roadside equipment. We've also been able to accomplish the actual back office testing, and we plan to proceed with that testing associated with the roadside facility next week. Much of the hardware itself and the gantries have been ordered, and much of the off-site testing has been completed. We are progressing with the necessary authorizations to enable the construction. We are planning for signage. I think we heard earlier the need for signage. On this facility, there will be a need for many decision point tolling signs to keep the public advised. And importantly for the public, we are planning for the proper customer service and resources for drivers. We also have been working with the Department of Motor Vehicles and establishing the necessary interfaces associated with the tolling system. And for this project, we've heard a little bit about payment of tolls. For this project, there will be two options for payment. One will be EasyPass, or one will be pay by plate. Now, of course, the EasyPass enables the lowest rate. The base rate has been established at $1.59 and the off-peak rate of $1.84. These rates reflect a 40% reduction since the conceptual proposal was submitted. And this is through a lot of hard work with our partners at the cities of Norfolk and Portsmouth and with VDOT on issues related to the project scope, financial planning, and the addition of the public contribution from the Commonwealth. Now, as John mentioned before, associated with EasyPass, it's a very reliable product. It's been in service for many years. In fact, back when John said it was implemented in 2003, I actually was an employee of VDOT and was on that implementation team at the time that VDOT actually implemented EasyPass in Virginia. It's widely accepted. And again, to address the concern over here, one of the main things for us associated with all electronic tolling is that drivers need to maintain speed, and so there's no need for stopping, because with this project, there will be no toll booths. Okay, for those drivers that in this all-electronic environment that have the EasyPass, there'll be equipment on the gantries that will read that device. And for those individuals that do not have the EasyPass device, there will be the associated equipment on those same gantries that will read their license plate and provide us the necessary information to invoice those customers. Now we talked a little bit about here in the last couple of presentations, the need and the number and the quantities that need to be out there associated with the tolls. For us, again, the downtown tunnel will start tolling somewhere in the third quarter of this year. And the main device that we hope to get in the customer hands, the main method of payment, will be the EasyPass device. It is our goal that the majority of the customers will be paying using the least expensive method, which is the EasyPass. And again, we've been working collaboratively with VDOT for some time now, identifying the quantities that we will need to have in place for the opening or the tolling commencement for this project. Okay, so one of the things that we've done in analyzing this is that we've had a toll working group that was formed back during the development phase of the project. That toll working group included members of VDOT's financial planning staff, their back office operator, their integrator, ourselves EasyPass, our integrator, our proposed back office operator, their consultants, our consultants. So we've had a full team looking at this. And what we've identified is with the estimated 120,000 transactions on day one for this project, our goal is a 50% penetration. And with that, we believe that of these transactions, so if we view this as 60,000 trips, we believe that 40,000 users will develop those trips. And such, we believe if you use an industry standard, we heard 4-to-1. We are a commuter road, and we believe that to be less. We're estimating 2-to-1. So our estimate is that on day one, for 50% penetration, we'll need somewhere in the order of 80,000 transponders in customers' hands. Now, we do know that there is a certain level of penetration in the area currently. There was a study done back several years ago that indicated there was somewhere between a 10 and 15% EasyPass penetration in the region.
Yes, no.
Could you go back through your numbers again in terms of, since they're not on the slide?
Correct.
I haven't seen these before. Help me again with the number of users, how many are commuters.
Okay. What we believe is this is going to be largely a commuter road. And so being a commuter road, if we look at the day one traffic of 120,000 transactions, and each of those transactions, a good portion of those will be a trip, which would include two transactions. So our target is 60,000 transactions of penetration.
60,000 trips.
Trips. Well, transactions. You pay, if you're a commuter, you pay going in the morning and you pay going in the evening.
So you're looking for 120.
Right.
Total transactions.
Total transactions. And with a 50% penetration, the goal would be 60,000 transactions. Okay. And so what we believe is that because we know...
As it relates to the Easy Pass.
Correct. 60,000. Right. Then the other 60,000 would be the pay-by-plate. So what we believe is the fact that it's a commuter road, that 40,000 users will generate those 60,000 trips. And as such, to get the industry standard is whether it's 2-to-1 or 3-to-1, there's a multiple that you need to get into the customer's hands, and so we're using a 2-to-1 multiplier to come up with the need for 80,000 transponders.
Thank you.
Okay, our understanding is that VDOT has allocated 100,000 transponders for this project. Or at least on order.
Mr. Chairman, what he's saying is that half the people aren't going to use these Easy Pass things.
Right? On day one. On day one. I'll continue on it and try to address that.
Okay.
Our goal, I think I mentioned earlier, as our goal, because this is the cheapest form of payment for the customer, we want them to have an Easy Pass. Unfortunately, what we've seen in other projects or in North America that our sponsors have participated with, it's unrealistic to get that level of penetration on day one. And in fact, one of the things that we're looking at, though, as that being our day one goal, as we'll see on another the next slide here, we talk about when that take-up occurs. And so I'll address that when we get there. So
the customers do like choices. You know, obviously, you know that. If you're trying to be responsive to customers, they like choices of method of payment.
Absolutely, absolutely. But we want them to also be able to take advantage of the lowest price to use the facility. And the Easy Pass is the lowest price. That's the published rate of $1.59, $1.89.
We'll be in loco parentis. Take care of it. I'll get you.
Stop doing that black stuff.
Okay, again, based on what we know, we feel like the quantities are on order, if not delivered yet. And so I've mentioned on a couple of times, what we know about the user is that they're largely commuters. And it's a regional movement. And we also recognize that there's different audiences that we need to approach there. That includes the military. And we've already had several meetings with those folks and plan to participate in all of their annual events. Tourism is to the community is vital. And what we've heard from the board before, and we agree, we must not tarnish the region's attractiveness to this. And we will communicate with industry groups in advance, and we will give tourism customers the opportunities to pay the Easy Pass rate. I'll share a little bit about our incentives, and that'll sort of talk about how we want to drive to the Easy Pass customers on the next slide. We know that there's temporary residents, as well as commercial fleet services, having unique needs. And we know the Easy Pass organization and the back office facilities are already geared up to handle these types of commercial account signups. And that'll be an important part of our outreach. And lastly, we're sensitive to the unbanked, underbanked, and unbanked. These individuals who do not have credit cards, we will make options available for them, and you'll see about that in the next slide. We recognize to make it easy for the drivers to obtain this Easy Pass, and we have we are clear about why it's important, and how we can save the driver's money. Easy Pass will enhance the ways in which drivers contain the Easy Pass. I think John shared with you a little bit more about earlier with the retail distribution program, He also talked about the option of additional customer service centers. We too will have customer service centers. And one of the ideas that we've been exploring with VDOT is to co-locate in those customer service centers, because we will also have a back office facility that will handle the account management of the pay-by-plate customers. We will also have a staff of ERC customer service representatives, and these employees will be based at our back office in one of our storefront facilities that we're proposing in the Portsmouth area. What we believe is that the greatest take-up or toll folks to obtain a transponder, while it's realistic to try to get those transponders out here well in advance, it's a tough sell to charge a deposit and a prepayment in advance of the use of that device. So what we've experienced on other projects, as well as the marketing and public relations consultant that we brought on board on another project out in Washington, is the heaviest month for transponders distribution is the month before and a couple of months afterwards of the tolling commencement. So that's what we're targeting, is that time frame to allow us to achieve that 50% penetration, is that three-month window around the tolling commencement. So for us, with the tolling commencement planned in the third quarter, we see our heaviest demand from the June to the September time frame. Now, we talked about the alternative. That's the pay-by-plate. This is a standard technology in other locations around the in North America. With this, pay-by-plate customers will have the option to pay on their account at our storefronts in the region, as well as we would encourage them to also at that time to convert to EasyPass, because again, that's the cheapest form of payment. But for whatever reason, some folks may not want the EasyPass. So we're providing a level of option for those individuals, and that's the pay-by-plate mode. Under the pay-by-plate scenario, we have a registered user and a non-registered user. And so one of the things that we are considering is having a different fee associated with those two different types of accounts.
Still on the fee, the 318, is that I don't understand what that really means, the processing fee not to, Mr. Chairman, sorry. Processing fee not to exceed 318.
Yes. That
happens to be double the...
Right, and that's what is provided by the actual comprehensive agreement.
Does that mean I would go in there one time to do that? Is that every time?
No, that's every transaction.
Every transaction?
Every transaction could be subject to a $3.18.
Let me ask you a question first. Every transaction, if I'm an EasyPass user, if I'm a pay-by-plate user?
No, that's the difference there. And that's why we are going to push folks to EasyPass. Go ahead, sir.
I'm trying to understand, if I'm a non-EasyPass user,
right,
I'm a pay-by-plate user, and I go in and I pre-fund an account. I'm a registered user. I pre-fund an account, and I give you $25 or whatever it is. And you charge me $318 in order to do that. So every time I come back in, is it $318? It's unclear here how the processing fee works. Unclear to me, anyway.
Okay.
So I'm just looking for you to walk me through.
Yes, certainly will. And that's part of where I will get to just in a bit on incentives, but I'll go ahead and address that right
now.
No, it's good that we address that and draw some clarity to that. So again, there's two types of customers. There's the EasyPass customer that will pay the $1.59 and $1.84 rate, depending on peak, non-peak. Okay, there is the video pay-by-plate customer. And on the video pay-by-plate customer, our back office system has the capability of establishing a registered account or a non-registered account. And one of the things that we're entertaining is if somebody wants to be a registered account, that it be less than the $318. But that is per transaction for a pay-by-plate transaction.
So if I came in weekly, I'd be paying that weekly. If I came in daily,
you would be paying that every transaction. And that's why individuals...
Every time I went through the tunnel or every time I made a deposit?
Every time you went through the tunnel. It's a transaction fee.
So I'd pay the toll plus 318?
Correct.
So if I was a pay-by-plate user, instead of paying $1.59, I'd pay three times that.
You absolutely would. Potentially. Potentially.
Well...
Again, what some of the incentives that we're looking at is if you want to be a registered account, you're an infrequent user, you don't want to give your information, you don't want to have this unit in your car, for whatever reason, you don't want to be an EasyPass customer, you can be a registered account with us, and you'll pay the toll, the $1.59, and we're looking at some range of a processing fee, but the maximum could be $3.18. You're correct.
So if I was a commuter...
You would want,
and you say the majority. This is a commuter road. It's a commuter system. If I'm a commuter, I've got to be an idiot to pay three times what I can pay one time.
I would probably agree with you.
And if I was going to pay three times that, and I was a commuter, what would that cost me a year?
Well, we haven't calculated that.
I'll tell you what the number is. It's about $3,000.
Yes. I've heard folks saying $1,000.
Well, just take $1.59, yeah. Multiply it by twice, times five, right. Times right. 52, and you get your answer. It's about $900. Multiply
so
that by three, it's 2,700.
You're following our right, the right track of what our goal is, in incentivizing individuals to take advantage of the least cost price.
I'm trying to understand that.
Yes.
And so if you hope for 50% penetration,
right.
In the beginning.
Right. We'll certainly take more.
The more the better.
Yeah.
What do you hope for at the end?
Well,
in 60 years from now.
No.
I mean,
our goal at the end of 5 years is 90%. So somewhere between tolling commencement and the 5 year when the new tunnel is complete, we're hoping for a 90% penetration. What we've seen on some other roads, one of our sponsors just opened up a road in Montreal, and their goal was 50%. And within a year, it was 85%.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Ms. Call.
Mr. Wisfall, do you have an idea of what your cost to administer the unregistered pay-by-plate transaction is?
Well, we haven't established that. Well, I mean, and we have an idea that we've put into our model. Okay. First of all, there's a DMV lookup. Okay. There's an additional system that you have to take the picture. There has to be some human intervention for some quality assurance associated with that. So there's an administrative factor associated with that. And depending on how the account is set up, whether it's a prepay or postpay, that makes a difference. Those transaction fees that we heard about earlier, if you're not a prepay and we have to do a postpaid environment, there's additional transaction fees for every time we have to bill you for that. For the customers who want invoices, there's a mailing associated with that. And so there is a lot more administrative cost associated with that. And again, per the terms of the comprehensive agreement and what's provided by code, is the maximum it can be is that fee can be two times the base toll.
So how much of that cost in your mind, percentage-wise, would be fixed asset cost, cameras, things of that nature, versus ongoing costs?
I don't have those figures. We certainly could.
The only reason I ask is, you know, at some point, if you get out to 90% EasyPass, 10% pay by plate, and 2% of the 10% is unregistered, does it even make sense to go after it?
To Jason.
Well, one of the things that we've done in our preparation for opening our back office, we've outsourced that responsibility because of the staffing ramp up associated with the changes in customer patterns here. And so we don't have that responsibility. We've put that on a contractual arrangement with our contractor. Okay. But what when we were some discussion here earlier about violation rates, actually in the toll facilities in Virginia, up to 50% of the actual violators are EasyPass customers because there's something associated with what we have is tag waivers, those folks that don't like to mount them. Okay? And so we're able to capture some of those things and not have to actually treat them as a pay-by-plate. What we have is what we call video toll. And so if we know who the account number is and we can match up the license plate with that, we can actually charge them through this VTOL process. And that's an arrangement that we'll be entering into with VDOT.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman.
Yes,
Ms. Mark.
I admire Madison Avenue as much as the next guy. Pay by plate is clearly a euphemism for photo enforcement. And my point remains that Joe Frank, simply because he lives west and south of Charlottesville, should not be subject to paying $5 for a $2 toll when he had no option but to use the toll and chose not to create an accident or a death and go ahead and do that. Obviously, the back office has the ability. Somewhere there needs to be some motivation that our citizens west and south of Charlottesville, who maybe left the transponder that they bought for vacation at home, otherwise have no need for transponder, do not pay excessive onerous penalties when they get stuck down there. And that's such a small percentage of those who are going through.
Right.
That is well worth the effort to make sure that happens.
Right. And that's a good point. And one of the incentives that we're considering is that if you happen to use the toll facility, you recognize that, you know, as you point, you're not from the region, you just went through. So within some time frame, we have showed 72 hours here, whether it's 96 hours or within a week's time frame, if you call us, we want to provide you with that easy pass rate. That's what one of the things that we're considering right now as part of our operating business rules.
You said provide with an easy pass what? You said you'd provide with an easy pass.
You would be able to take advantage of the low rate, the easy pass rate.
Okay.
Yeah. So for those types of customers, we are considering those types of options.
Mr. Chairman, that is an option well worth not just consideration but implementation.
Right.
Mr. Chairman.
Can I just ask you something? Now, Maryland. Does Maryland, I have the impression for the ICC, that Maryland was actually allowing you to buy a prepackaged easy pass that didn't have the loading, the $20 or whatever. Why can't we just simply do, somebody comes in and buys a prepackaged? I know I'm going to be down there for a week. I mean,
a prepackage on the easy pass account or our video account?
Easy pass.
Okay, I would have to ask
the
Mr. Walton.
The video is something different. I'm just wondering, and I was just asked Mr. Lawson, understand, what is Maryland doing? I thought that I saw some advertisements that they were doing something. You can go into a 7-Eleven and buy a prepackaged $10, $20. So all I'm saying is somebody else coming into the area. Is that true or not?
Maryland is doing the Easy Pass on the Go program like we are trying to implement now. Where they are selling the transponder from retail establishment that's ready and to be used upon when you walk at the store, and you still would have the value on it. The thing to remember is the transponder has an 8-year life. It's not a disposable product. You don't want people just to buy it and throw it away.
Okay. Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Mr. Miller.
First of all, I'm not sure if I'm getting ahead of you or not, but let me ask you a couple other questions. How many outlets do you think you need to have in order to sell the 80,000 or to distribute the 80,000 transponders that need to be there in September? And how many do you have now? And what's sort of the flow rate of those coming online and how many come through? And how's that one?
Okay, good question, and I'll have to call upon some of the statistics that John had presented to us earlier, that we're hoping that we do achieve that 68% or higher with the website. And so we...
The toll comes on October 1.
Third quarter.
Beginning of the third quarter. July is the beginning of the fourth quarter.
So it's July 1?
Within the third quarter.
We just went from beginning to within. Somewhere between July and September.
Correct.
Okay, I used September 1. Maybe I was
okay.
Picking my birthday.
So as I mentioned earlier, our experience is that the majority of the folks, it's just their nature, They're going to procrastinate, and they're going to wait till the last minute. And again, for the other reasons I said, with the current mechanism for obtaining an E-ZPass, it costs you $60 on day one unless you have the ACH and a credit card backing, where it is just the $35 prepayment.
I'm trying to find out how many outlets you'll have.
Okay.
When they'll come online.
We're going to have two storefronts of our own. Okay? And what we've heard from John is they're also exploring potential opportunities for storefronts. And as I said earlier, we would hope to co-locate in those locations. Because after commencement, I also shared with you, we see a window that is 2 weeks after tolling commencement, there's going to be much activity. And we believe with that co-location, both at storefronts and back office operators, it provides the best seamless environment for the customer. So when they convert from our play-by-play customer to an E-ZPass customer, it's a seamless customer
right
experience.
Right now we have two. Where are they going to be?
We're looking at one in Portsmouth and one in Norfolk.
Somewhere?
Yes.
You're not sure yet?
Well, we're pretty specific on the one in Portsmouth.
Okay. And however many John's going to get to tell us each month about from now until whenever that date is. He'll be letting us know where those other locations
are. Correct.
Second question. You're very familiar now with the sort of the terrain and the territory and the roadway system.
A bit.
Let's pretend that I live in Port Norfolk, or I live in Old Town Portsmouth, or I live in Churchland. And I'm going to one of the four biggest employment centers in the region, whether it's downtown, the Naval Base, EVMS/Centera Medical Complex, or ODU or Norfolk State. What other way do I have to get there if I don't come through the Martin Luther King to downtown or the Midtown or the Jordan Bridge?
Well, I'll have
Which
to...
Which way would you go?
Okay, I'll have to confess when I said I'm familiar with the area. I wasn't responsible to the team
traffic
and revenue study, but I would say... Certainly we could get that information for you. That was addressed in the traffic and revenue study.
Well, I'll answer it for you. Somebody's lived there for 54 years.
Okay.
There is no reasonable alternative.
My understanding is without additional time and expense.
Substantial.
Yes.
My next question is, when we did all this work, and you know, obviously the companies like yours or the Macquarie's and the Skanska's and so forth are sophisticated, smart entities. Did we do any demographic analysis of the people that would be using the tunnels? Demographic meaning financial analysis, economic analysis.
What did that tell us?
The commuter system told us. So what's the typical commuter that's using it now? What is their economic or demographic profile?
I don't have that information available. We certainly can get that for you. But that was determined.
So I'm sorry. What is the point? I'm trying to understand.
Look at the impact. And back to Mr. Martin's comment, which I agree with, but I would say to Mr. Martin, the people in Portsmouth might ask you why they have to pay a toll to go to work every day, and they don't really care if you're coming from Charlottesville and you got to pay a little extra because you ain't paying it every day. They are. That's what they would tell you, whether you agree with that or whether you don't.
But, I mean, obviously, I mean,
we just don't want to pay the penalty.
This issue, whatever, Mr. Miller.
Which one?
Just tell you what they just tell you.
Is that the last one? Okay.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I want to support Mr. Martin's comments and thoughts. It's not that we don't want to pay that toll, and the toll should be the same. We're trying to get out of the penalty.
Well, and they would tell you, this is a philosophical debate, it's not really part of this presentation, but since we're into it, they would say, why do I have to pay a toll if I live there to get to work, and if I live in Charlottesville, I don't have to pay a toll to get to work? Why is that? That's the fundamental question that they're going to ask you. I agree that it ought not to sort of discriminate, but the system discriminates by definition from the beginning. And that, whether you agree it's fair and equitable or whatever, or whether it's, you know, the right thing or the wrong thing, I'm not opining on that. I'm telling you what they would say there, or what they are saying there. why do I have to bear that burden when most of the other people in the Commonwealth don't have to bear that burden? And it's not a situation where I'm going sort of, you know, it's not a throughput situation, it's a commuter situation. It's a fundamental commuter situation, which is what we've heard this morning. So that's what the complaint would be. How you assess that and whether it's, you know, reasonable or not is a whole different issue.
So, I mean, but right now, what's the situation you have today in that crossing?
It's a mess. You know the situation. It's a mess.
Okay, so the situation is, right now, it is, in fact, it takes, on average, 3 times longer for people to get through the downtown and midtown tunnel than it does the Hampton Roads Bridge tunnel. It's level F plus. In fact, the average speed going through the downtown and midtown tunnel is 6 to 9 miles per hour.
I live it every day. I'm there every day.
Okay. So right now, conservatively, if we build this tunnel and build the Martin Luther King extension and rehab, we're going to cut at least 30 minutes off commute. So there's obviously time associated with that.
Absolutely.
As well as the fact that, I mean, right
I'm
now...
I'm not arguing against it.
Okay.
I'm just telling you what the folks are going to ask, the questions they're asking. You're out in front of me. I'm not saying it's not the right thing to do. It's not a good thing to do. It's not that it doesn't save time and commuting and all that. I'm telling you, I've lived it for 54 years on both of those tunnels. So I really don't need anybody else to tell me what's happening there because I live it.
Yeah.
I don't live the 495 every day, but I do live downtown, the midtown, and the Hampton Roads Bridge Tunnel. I would tell you that if you're telling me that at peak time it's 3 times longer to get through the downtown and midtown tunnels than it is the Hampton Roads tunnels, you need to get your analysts to go back and take another look.
That actually comes from the TPO.
I fundamentally disagree with you.
Okay.
It backs up 7, 8, 10 miles every day at the Hampton Roads Bridge Tunnel, past Ward's Corner. You can ask Director Drake, she's lived this thing. And it's a half an hour at least to get to the tunnel. It's not an hour and a half to get to the downtown and midtown tunnels. It's a long time. It's a half an hour. Sometimes it's an hour. It's a bad situation. We need to fix it. I thought that we're trying to fix it. I'm just telling you what the people would say in response to Mr. Martin's point is that's fine. We need to fix our problem. But when we fix some other people's problems, we don't necessarily put tolls on them to do it. And so why is it us and not them? And that's not to say we don't have tolls in Richmond. We don't have tolls in Northern Virginia because we do. This is a unique situation in the sense that there is no alternative that's reasonable. There are always alternatives, but there is no alternative that's reasonable, and it's commuters. It's not people going to the Outer Banks on Chesapeake Expressway. It's not, there's no other way to get there. It's not I-95. I applaud I-95. We're going to capture a lot of people that blow through the Commonwealth and pay nothing to use the roads. That's a great thing. But that's not a commuter road for some of it it is. For certainly people going from Fredericksburg, it's a commuter road. But large sections of 95 have a lot of throughput traffic on them. This is not. And so those people, rightly or wrongly, that's their bitch, if you will. That's their gripe.
So but
I have no alternative, and to get to work, I got to spend $1,000 a year just to get to work, and I'm making $15 an hour. Do the math. That's their.
So what's your alternative?
Well, I can give you lots of alternatives, but they're not.
But what is it, Mr. Miller? I'm just intrigued. I'm intrigued. What's the alternative?
The alternative is for the Commonwealth to get in the game and raise the revenue in a centralized way and say we're going to fix our transportation problem. That's the alternative. But we all know that for decades they've refused to do that. So as a practical matter, you're absolutely right. As a practical matter, there is no other alternative. And that's why those of us who support this support it, because it, practically speaking, is the only alternative. And I think I applaud the administration. I applaud the secretary, Claude Vidot, they're not the ones that put themselves in this boat, though. Okay? That's the problem. The problem is the government, the legislature, and previous administrations for years and decades have not done what they needed to do. And so now there is no alternative. So we're forced to take the medicine, which sometimes can be worse than the cure, or worse than the disease.
But on the other, but I will point this out as well. The cost of if you look at the history of just this project, all right, this has been discussed for 20-something years and had several fits and starts. And now if you look at the price of this, because we sat around for 20 years and now...
I'm applauding. I just think that we've been dealt a bad hand as an administration and as a citizenry. And we've done it to ourselves in some respects. But we've dealt ourselves a bad hand. Now we've got to take the medicine. And the medicine isn't necessarily equitable, and it's not necessarily good, but it's all we got. So, yeah, I'm not against this. I'm saying that we shouldn't be in this box we're in. There were plenty of reasonable solutions. We didn't do our job for decades, and now we're having to do. Now we're having to take the only practical solution we had. And, you know, it's all hindsight, but a lot of people have been saying this for a long time, and I don't see any movement going forward to change the problem.
And the thing is,
and it's unfair to this administration, it's unfair to you, it's unfair to us, it's unfair to everybody. Somebody needs to step up that's in a position to make the decision, and there's 140 of them that can say, we're going to change it.
And the thing is to keep in mind is delaying this project. The prices aren't going down on this time. They're going up. And so the issue is that any delay on this project...
It just makes it worse.
Just
makes
the situation even worse.
I'm all on board.
Mr. Culp?
Mr. Chairman, does this discussion suggest that we may want to turn up the marketing and communication of the benefits of this project, kind of ramp up that initiative so that at least the user understands the benefits of the project? Because it sounds as though they don't. The project to them means $1.59 to $1.84 more in per trip cost.
Well, Mr. Lane, maybe you can...
The issue has been well publicized. This is not a surprise to anybody.
Sure.
The whole bit. And there are, you know, Mr. Miller's comments are what a lot is being said, and that this project is the top-ranked project in Hampton Roads, needed by not only our citizenry, but our military, our ports, economic. It's got to be done. And I believe that inaction is a lot more costly than the action we're taking. But it is, as Mr. Miller states, this is what we are confronted with. From a publicizing standpoint, I think we have a lot of the press here. I think it's all gotten out there. We've had informational meetings. It has now gotten to the point where we simply have people who don't want to pay any tolls on unrealistic positions. So I'm not suggesting we don't continue to do that. That's not the answer, Roger. I agree with you. But it really is we're forced with the decision as to whether this is better to move forward or not. I firmly believe it is better to move forward with where we are. I do not believe citizens ought to be treated differently. And in the rest of the state, they cross the facility, they should be treated just like everybody else.
I'm sorry, listen, and I appreciate, we'll have some more opportunity later on to chat about this. We're only on the third presentation, we're 2 hours in. Any other questions regarding ERC, specifically about the implementing? Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think the thing we have not done well, even though DRPT is involved with the Elizabeth River project, is to talk about carpool, vanpool, transit subsidy that's in place, so that people right now don't think there are any options. And there are options. Hampton Roads has been very successful working through traffic on carpools, vanpools, and I think if we can start talking more about that.
Absolutely.
And us being more aggressive, it may help, because everyone agrees doing nothing has certainly got a tremendous cost.
Chairman?
Yes, Mr. Rich. I agree that this project is extremely important and we need to go forward with it. Now, I certainly support it. You know, I think it was great that you brought the whole board down into Tidewater so we could see what a mess it is. But I do think we need to spend the revenues that we have very wisely. We moved $240 million out of the mega project fund into the Charlottesville thing that would operate at a level F. We maybe need to keep some of that money to draw down the toll rates for this project and some of the others. Let's just bear that in mind, that we shouldn't be moving money out of these mega project sources of funding.
Excellent point. Okay, any other questions? Thank you very much. We'll move on to...
I really wasn't finished because I wanted to address a couple of the concerns of these last comments, but if you want us to conclude here, we really haven't talked about our marketing efforts, and I think that addresses some of these concerns right here. For us, this takes place during the time frame when we believe folks will be wanting to sign up for an account. And so we have currently, as has been mentioned here, we're looking at new ways that we can market the project so folks have a clear understanding the benefits of the project, all about the tolling about the project, the potential jobs that will be created, the subcontractor opportunities, and again, so I'll cut to the chase about some of the incentives that we're looking at, because we're going to embark upon a major advertising campaign in the spring for this project associated with the time frame that we believe that folks will be looking for that easy pass. A couple of the incentives that we're considering right now is free trips for if you sign up in advance of a certain target date. And so we do that in advance of the tolling commencement, as well as we would utilize that strategy going forward once the facility opens up. Also mentioned the 72-hour rule, whether it's 72, 96, we would afford the opportunity for infrequent users, the opportunity, if they went through the facility, pick up the phone, give us a call, and we could have that straightened out and get you to the easy pass toll. As I also mentioned, that we believe the 2 months following tolling commencement are going to be very important for us to market the toll, the easy pass product. And so what we're considering right now is a significant waiving of these pay-by-plate fees during that period of time if you will sign up for an easy pass. So we think with the month before and the 2 months after, we'll be in position to achieve that 50% that we're looking for, and we're certainly going to do everything possible to educate the consumer.
Okay, excellent. Thank you very much. Appreciate you being here. We'll look forward to seeing you again soon. 95 Hot Lane, Mr. Holcomb.
I was going to start out with good morning, but good afternoon. Good afternoon, Mr. Secretary, board members. Today I want to try to talk to you, give you a little bit of update on what's going on the I-95 HOV, HOT lanes projects and project activities that are going on since the discussion and presentation that Deputy Commissioner Kilpatrick gave in December. And I also want to make a request that John Lawson will give to you a little bit later, but a request for funding from the Toll Facilities Revolving Account to do the early works. You heard from the ERC presentation that early works was done there. We're still focusing on the I-95 HOV project for some early works, too. You've seen this slide before. This is the project. Obviously, it's the 9-mile extension from Dumfries down to Garrisonville, 2-to-3-lane expansion for 14 miles from Prince William Parkway to Edsel Road on I-395, some operational improvements for a 6-mile section, and added new improvements to access points. Some of the project activities that have been going on over the last 3 months, Commissioner Worley signed a toll agreement with FHWA. It is currently up at FHWA headquarters. It's given its final review and signature. We're hoping this week or the beginning of next week that will be finalized. We have been working closely with our private sector partners to finish compiling the comprehensive agreement. The presentation in December was focused on the major business points. Using that as a basis, we're putting the comprehensive agreement together and all the exhibits associated with that. We've also submitted a letter of interest for TIPIA and a pre-application for a Tiger grant. We received a $20 million Tiger grant from FHWA. We're looking to supplement that $20 million with some additional funds either through TIPIA or through the Tiger program. The focus of the presentation and the remaining slides will be focused on the early works. And really what the early works are, there's a time period between now and financial close that we want to try to capture some activities with the private sector, and most of those activities are focused on preliminary engineering to prepare ourselves to get right into construction when we go to financial close. Some of those early works include the initiation of some designs, some long lead item designs, such as bridge designs, geotechnical analysis, and survey. Other things that will allow us to go immediately to construction is making sure that we have our maintenance of traffic plan together, making sure we've got erosion sediment control, some of our development plans together. And those would be part of these early works that we're working with the private sector with. Some technical activities, data collection, traffic collection, geotechnical analysis along the corridor, looking at the risk of some of the soils down, especially through the southern section. Utility coordination, traffic and toll management systems, working with ERC to make sure that we've got the tolling systems in place when the project is implemented. Some of the benefits of this, obviously, we want to be able to start construction, and if we can start construction right when we get to financial close, then we're able to keep the design build price that we negotiated with FTU and also get the construction season for 2012. These activities will allow FTU to hit the ground running when we do get to financial close. And financial close, as you'll see on the next slide, is estimated to be this summer. And obviously the funds that we're requesting through the toll facility revolving account will reduce the Commonwealth's contribution. Originally in December, it was shown as $97 million. It's a little bit lower now. Some of the interest rates have gone down. But the funding that we use here will reduce that $97 million. Schedule, obviously, we want to get the early works. There's an amendment that we've created to the interim agreement. We'll have that signed as soon as possible, get the early works initiated here in March. Our targeted commercial close is the April-May, focusing really on April of 2012. Targeted financial close is July-August, focusing again on July 2012. And then construction can begin right away because of these early works, because of the funding that's put in place now, we can get construction going right away. Now, the action that we're requesting of you, obviously, is requesting a maximum of $45 million out of the toll facilities revolving account. The CFO, John Lawson, will provide a resolution in a meeting that you're going to have after the workshop. And the reimbursement is anticipated to come through proceeds from the Garvey bonds and other such funds as may be available to CTB. We anticipate at financial close it'll be a repayment element within the financial close structure that will replay the toll facility revolving account. And with that, I'll take any questions of the board or Mr. Secretary.
Secretary, any other questions? Yes.
So see how traffic mitigation, that's going to be the biggest concern. You know what 95 is like when Fredericksburg going up. What are your plans? How bad is it going to get before it gets better?
Well, you know the construction that's going on the Capitol Beltway right now. A lot of that construction is because there's a lot of changes in the general purpose lanes. There's not as many changes in the general purpose lane. A lot of this will go in the HOV lanes, and the southern section will be in the median itself. So our hope is that there will be limited lane closures on the general purpose lanes, focusing in on it. But we have some studies that we're putting together. We're going to be doing some mitigation. We're working on some park and rides as part of it to try to enhance the HOV usage along the corridor itself. So there are some different things, and we've put some money in the budget to focus in on creating some opportunities for transit and for other uses along the corridor. So our hope is that, at least on the general purpose lanes, the effect won't be as much.
Okay. Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Mr. Richards.
At the bottom of the page there, we're talking about reimbursement, and that last item kind of gets into this board's statutory authority. Where are you expecting these funds to come from? Do you have them identified, or and how much are we talking about?
Well, we're estimating the early works to be about $43 million. We believe that working with FHWA, that about $25 to $26 million of those dollars are federally eligible. So we can get reimbursement through the Garvey program.
And the rest of the dollars will come first come from the toll facilities revolving account and then be reimbursed by the private sector when we go to financial close. So the toll facilities revolving account will be reimbursed for the full amount that we utilize to a maximum of $45 million.
But you're saying here other such funds as may be available to the CTB. What are those funds and how much you're talking about?
Well, John, you're certainly here to talk about the funding part of it. But again, our goal, the funds are at risk. So with the toll facilities revolving account, the funds that we put out that aren't federally eligible will be at risk to the Virginia Department of Transportation. So we would, if we didn't go to financial close, we would have to identify through the program the repayment of those funds through identifying which projects could move forward to reimburse those funds.
So you're saying that obviously this would affect the six-year plan and possibly as to other projects, funds might be diverted to pay for this.
Yeah, our focus is to get to financial close and have the private sector reimbursement, but if we do not get to financial close, yes, sir, that is correct.
But I would like to know maybe later where you think these funds might come from and what other projects in the Commonwealth may be affected. I don't think we can give blank approval just to dip into those funds without this board knowing those questions and voting on them, frankly.
I can certainly work with Commissioner and Mr. Lawson to try to address that question if we need to, Mr. Secretary.
Lawson.
Just to address that, I just want to reiterate what Dusty was saying is there's no risk or no need for additional CTV funds unless the project fails to go to close. So right now we've got the $97 million that is already our contribution plan for the project, which will be provided for at a Garvey's. You know, we haven't sold the Garvey's yet. That's the reason we need to seek and to use these toll facility revolving funds in advance. As soon as the Garvey's are sold and we go to close, then the Garvey's will repay the federally eligible components. The components that are not federally eligible will be repaid by the private sector.
Aren't we just coming off a successful sale of bonds just last month?
That's correct. That's correct.
Yeah, this is probably just a technical thing, but if you read your resolution, leaves a blank check to or a direct line of credit to the six-year plan. And I may have an amendment that just says that subject to approval by the CTB or something like that, that you'll have to come back to us. If you need additional funds out of the six-year plan, then you need to come back to us. And we're just by adopting your resolution, we're not automatically saying you have a blank check to come into the six-year plan or the revenues that we have statutory authority over. Does that make sense?
But
certainly probably wouldn't harm anything, right?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, the only way funds can be provided to projects are by way of the program, which you approve.
I'm sorry.
You're taking the request is actually on the toll road revolving account.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And that is to advance the project. And then it will be repaid once we sell the Garveys for this project.
Correct.
In the possibility that there isn't a project, we don't go to close, then somehow we have to reimburse the toll road revolving account.
Correct.
And we would have then probably plenty of opportunities to be amended, because we really probably wouldn't amend the six-year plan per se, because we still have the Garveys, and we would probably put on another project that we could then reimburse the toll road revolving account.
Absolutely. I mean, because the Garveys would then be made available to something else, as you said.
Now, if the project were to tank, we would probably be one of the first people to know about it. Would that be correct?
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
Okay. So we have plenty of time, then we would then have the opportunity then to have a discussion as to how we reimburse the toll road revolving account.
Absolutely.
So is that all right, Mr. Rich? I mean, I'm just...
Well, all I would do is at the end of this where it says be it further resolved, at the last part of that sentence, or such other funds made available at the discretion of the Commonwealth Transportation Board.
but just make sure that we're involved. And it probably it's not going to happen that we have to delve into the six-year plan of funds, but I just want to make sure that it's clear that you all come back to us and then discuss that and where those funds might come from.
Mr. Worley.
Mr. Chairman, I would be okay with that that adjustment there. But the bottom line is when we make any adjustments to the projects, they come back to the CTB for approval, whether that's transfers, whether that's during the six-year development process. So the control point has not changed. The control point for you to approve any changes in our program or any changes in our project would come back to this body.
And that's policy.
I just want to make it clear, as a lawyer, you read this stuff, and one resolution can overrule another, and so no one has a concern about it. So that's where we're at. It just reinforces the fact that it has to come back.
But it has to come back anyway.
Yes. Maybe, unless it's overruled, unless the policy is overruled by a subsequent resolution like this. So anyhow, it's no big deal.
No harm, no foul.
Okay. Any other questions, Ms. Tull?
No, sir.
Excellent. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Secretary.
We're on to number four. Let's get to the fifth presentation. Mr. Lawson, financial report.
All right, good afternoon. Y'all are getting tired of me today, aren't you?
No, not at all.
Okay, I'll give you a quick update on performance through February. We'll be mindful of time here, and we'll try to go through this pretty quickly. In terms of revenue, our state revenue collections this year are carrying on about where they've been. We are running about just shy of 3% ahead of where we were prior year, and slightly ahead of the forecasted growth of 2.2%. In terms of motor vehicle sales and use tax collections, that still continues to be the strongest performer of the state revenues. We're looking at growth rates still running above 9%. In terms of motor fuels tax collections, we are running about 1.5% behind where we were this time last year, which is slightly behind forecast. You see forecast is a decline of 1.4%. In terms of where we go between here and the end of the year, there is hope and expectation that the spring will come additional driving, additional fuel consumption. However, we are concerned with the rising fuel prices and whether that will kind of have a chilling effect on additional consumption. Sales tax collections are up just over 5% from last year, just very slightly behind forecast. And you can see the detailed items illustrated on this chart, the top three being motor fuel tax, motor vehicle sales and use tax, and the state sales and use tax the top motor fuel tax is the only one of the three that is not performing. Turning to federal revenues, we are maintaining our constant flow there. We are about $27 million ahead of where we were this time last fiscal year. That net increase is kind of offset by an increase of $56 million related to maintenance spending, as we have a much more robust maintenance program this year. And we are down about $32 million in the construction program.
Mr. Chair, that deficit in the construction side is primarily what, John?
This is a comparison just of revenue, federal revenues associated with the federal program, or less this year than they were a year ago. It's not necessarily a deficit, and it's just reflective of the projects that are underway at this point in time and how the federal revenues are associated with those projects.
Both of these charts are in thousands, correct?
This chart is thousands. Yes.
And the other one's in thousands.
That is correct. Yes, sir.
But it doesn't say that.
Okay.
No, it does. It says it. The other one didn't. I didn't see it on the other one. Yeah.
In terms of spending,
directed me.
We've expended about $2.6 billion through the end of February. That's over $300 million ahead of where we were last fiscal year. And the majority of that spending is related to maintenance activities. In terms of maintenance, 53% of the total spending is related to maintenance when you include payments to localities. 45% is associated, which is VDOT's maintenance program. And the construction program represents about 34% of spending. This graphic just shows you the year-over-year change between the major programs. You'll notice that most programs are very much in line with where they were last year, with the exception of the maintenance program, which is significantly greater. In fact, maintenance is about 34% ahead of where they were last fiscal year. We've expended $1.2 billion through February, compared to about $860 million through February of 2011. Looking forward, we are expecting to spend about $1.7 billion out of the $1.9 billion allocations, indicating that we would have a unspent allocation balance at year-end of about $200 million. You can see here on this chart, in looking at current spending to date, we had forecasted a spending of about 1.26 compared to the 1.16. So we're about $100 million short of where we thought we would be as of this point in time. Of that $100 million, a positive note to say is that we have spent about $60 million of our $125 million that was budgeted for snow. So that in and of itself represents a very large portion of that variance. In terms of the construction program, we have spent about $870 million this year. Of which that represent about $130 million of that is based on the ARRA program and the ARRA projects. The actual expenditures are about $16 million ahead of our forecasted spending. I think that's largely attributable to the warm winter months that we had and the lack of bad weather.
Quick comment, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, good point.
Looks like we're going to make it through with no bad weather. Did we reprogram those savings into the other things?
Yes, Chairman. Mr. Lane, we did authorize some additional work in our paving area this year.
Right, thank you.
This is the anticipated spending chart for all the major programs. I've already kind of hit the highlights related to the major programs. All in all, we're about $95 million behind our forecasted spending. Cash balance, you'll notice that we have a significant increase in cash balance reflected over the last month. This reflects the very bottom line you see on the chart, the $350 million received in Garvey proceeds. Again, these proceeds were sold in anticipation of the closing on the Downtown Midtown project. And just to kind of wrap up, from a contract perspective, we do have about $2.5 billion outstanding, which is about $500 million more than we were last year, with unspent balances about 19% greater than last year. As you saw from the previous slides, our spending for most programs are pretty well in line with forecasted spending. We are watching maintenance. You know, spending is lower than forecast, but as I mentioned, we think a lot of that is related to the lack of snow expenditures, and we had talked before about some of the contract that didn't finish early and will be finished in the beginning of this season. And we are looking at an unspent allocation balance in the maintenance program of just over $200 million at the end of the year. Answer any questions?
Chairman?
Yes, Mr. Richard.
Can you give us a little
enlightenment on the state budget mess and how that may be affecting our funds, and also do we have any clear picture of federal, the situation of the federal highway bill?
Well, in terms of federal highway, you know, they're still, you know, playing with bills and trying to figure out how they're going to move that forward. I think it's likely at this point that there will be another continuation with the current resolution expires end of this month. So I expect we'll see another continuation that will likely carry us into next year. In terms of the state budget, you know, that obviously is still up in the air to be revisited, I guess, on the 21st when they come back to town. Not a lot else to say related to that at this point.
The but I mean the real warning sign is this issue on the gas tax receipts. As the prices go up, we'll continue to see the drop in the in our receipts, right?
That is a very, very real possibility, yes, sir.
Ms. Lawson, did you see, by the way, they just put out that the state's receipts were up almost 17. They just put out now, it's up almost 17% year over year.
From the general fund perspective, yes.
Yeah. So that impacts our sales tax. So that continues to go up.
Correct. Yeah, sales tax, sales tax are tracking very close to the forecast,
yeah,
which is about a 5.5% growth over last year.
All righty, any other questions? Great. Legislative update. Maxwell.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair. And Carol, which one is this? Just to start, you all have basically a document that consists of the various bills and right now demonstrating or showing the various statuses. On the document, on the right-hand corner, where you see, if you see status, if you see a chapter number, that means the bill's been signed by the governor, it is law, or will be effective come July 1, unless it has emergency enactment. Any other status that you'll see, if it's pending legislation, that means it's been passed by the House and the Senate, it's been presented to the governor, but the governor has not yet taken action. Just a point of clarification. Just very briefly, we're going to do another presentation at the probably at the next meeting in April. Reconvened session is April 18th, so we'll do our best to provide you with information as to the final outcome. First of all, just a quick update on the eminent domain bills. They pretty much, all of the pieces are in place for a constitutional amendment. We have the referendum, the language for the questions that will be going to the public in November. We have now the second enactment of, in essence, the bill with containing the constitutional amendment language. And finally, we have the bills that have defined lost profits and lost access. I would note that since our last meeting, the bills defining lost profit and lost access have been significantly modified so that the language is certainly less broad than it was before. So now we are estimating, and again, these are very rough estimates, that the impacts would be, had the bills been in place for the last 3 years, the impacts would be approximately $12.4 million a year, or basically $37.5 million for 3 years. So, again, just to give you a sense.
Just one question on that. Where did VML and VACO end up where they are now? Are they supportive at this point? Are we still getting feedback from local government that it's too open-ended and really is a big concern for counties?
Mr. Chair, I don't know that I'm in a position to speak for VML or VACO. I think there might be some representatives here, but I can certainly find out. We can certainly find out for you. Another quick, so that's the status of the eminent domain bills. Again, they've not yet been signed, but they have been passed by both houses. HOV bills, use of hybrids, another interesting bill modification of the law has taken place this year. Bottom line, it looks like they're going to be eliminating the sunset for use of hybrid vehicles on HOV lanes. But they have, it looks like the focus now is going to be on federal legislation. Infinity at point in time, HOV usage by HO hybrids is not permitted by federal law. That will eliminate their usage in the Commonwealth. The bills will also require VDOT to report to the houses, the House and the Senate transportation chairs, just basically advising that, you know, whether there's degradation in any particular facility to, again, enable them to make decisions in the future. Another bill of interest, and the bills that I thought you might find particularly interested are highlighted. The eminent domain bills are green, the others are yellow. House Bill 466 was a VDOT bill that was passed by both the House and the Senate on its way to the governor. House Bill 545, again, that was a VDOT bill that would authorize VDOT safety service patrols to drive off the roadway or on the shoulders without the direction of law enforcement. Again, a congestion mitigation effort.
These are all by North Virginia legislators playing around the edge.
This is a bill that you all might have some involvement in, and I thought you might be interested in reading about. Basically, House Bill 599 is a bill that would require VDOT to look at projects and evaluate projects in a slightly different manner than is done today. Bottom line, the idea is VDOT is supposed to look at bills in the Northern Virginia region or look at projects slightly differently by focusing on the means or the amount of congestion mitigation as well as enhanced mobility in the event of a Homeland Security event. While the bills seem to require significant change in how we look at things, bottom line, there's still a lot of flexibility in this bill. VDOT is to do these evaluations only to the extent funding is available. The CTB is to, the projects were to look at significant projects and only those projects that really have been identified by the CTB as significant, et cetera. And the CTB is given quite a bit of discretion in how it identifies what are significant projects. So, again, there's a Senate version that's exactly the same. That's SB 531. That was Senator Morrison's bill. Again, those bills have been enacted or by both houses on the way to the governor. House Bill 646, VDOT bill. It was a bill just basically designed to enhance and improve our outdoor advertising permitting process, particularly for billboards. Bottom line, that's now been enacted. It's going to help us streamline the program. It's going to hopefully help us raise more revenues and bring the expenses or the revenues more in line with the cost of administering. Overweight vehicle permits and fees bill, that legislation, while it was a DMV bill, I just wanted to bring it to your attention because what it will do is probably bring about, we anticipate maybe $4.5 million each year to the HMOF. It increases the overweight fees for overweight vehicles. And again, we'll give you a little more detail next month's meeting. Performance and payment bond bill, that HB 945, that was a VDOT bill. Again, the idea was to increase the thresholds for transportation construction projects for bonds. Originally, the bill would have allowed us to waive bond requirements for construction projects that were valued at greater than $500,000. The bill has undergone significant change so that now we can, the threshold for those projects or for bond requirements has been limited to they've been increased for only performance and payment bonds from 250 to 350, and then the contractor or the bidder has to show that they've been unable to get a bid bond. So the bill has undergone significant change. Again, it's been passed by both the House and the Senate, and it's now in front of the governor. House Bill 1248, Senate Bill 639, those were the governor's transportation funding bills. Again, they've undergone significant transformation. Bottom line, there are, it provides that the transportation share of the surplus is still 67%. But what's interesting is they've changed the definition now of non-recurring funds. Right now, one-third of the surplus is dedicated to non-recurring funds or expenses. They changed that definition so that now it can include transportation projects. So that's I think, somewhat of a creative way to potentially provide for more transportation funding to come out of the surplus. The bill would authorize the naming. We discussed this last time. What the CTB and or VDOT is going to have to do is establish guidelines for naming facilities and guidelines that will establish the fees for naming transportation facilities. The bill also is going to require more coordination between local planning and the CTB. Again, the details are here, and we'll go into those in more detail, or those specifics into more detail next time. Revenue sharing, there's a new aspect to revenue sharing. This has managed to survive the governor's bill pretty much intact, bottom line. Revenue sharing can now be used $5 million. Right now, a locality can get up to $10 million pursuant to the revenue sharing program. Now, if this bill ultimately is signed, they can use up to $5 million for maintenance projects. A couple of other interesting changes. Right now, there's a two-year limit. If revenue sharing funds, if a project has not expended at least some of its revenue sharing funding within 2 years of allocation, that the CTB can deallocate those funds. That time period has now been shortened to 1 year, again, with the idea to speed these projects up and get the ball rolling. There's also a provision that says basically if we haven't expended all of the revenue sharing program funds in any given fiscal year, a locality can actually exceed the amounts that are set forth in the statute, but again, we have to have, we've not, you know, there will have to be the provisions that basically say that can only happen if we've not spent all of the revenue sharing funds for that year. There are a couple of, as you all know, there currently is no budget bill, but a couple of interesting provisions in the version of the House bill that did pass the House. There's a Northern Virginia MPO. There's language in the House bill that would establish or have the Secretary convene a work group to study the feasibility of creating a separate Northern Virginia MPO. There's also a provision that would direct the Secretary to convene a work group to study potential options for devolution of secondary roads in large jurisdictions. And finally, there's a provision that would direct the Secretary of Transportation to work with the Transportation Accountability Commission to study VDOT's SWAM program, Small Business Program. Each of these items are to be reported back or would have to be reported back October 2012. Let's see. We've already talked about HOV. Incident management is just a Senate bill. ABC is the same. And I think that's it. There are a couple of bills that were carried over that you might be interested in hearing about very briefly. As you all are aware, there were the CTB composition bills. Right now, it's our understanding, the Senate, basically, in Senate Transportation, they pretty much just carried those bills over with the expectation, I think, that we're going to look at the issue over the next year, study CTB composition, you know, how to best select members, and again, one of the biggest issues in those was whether to tie CTB membership to congressional districts.
Mr. Chairman, I think that's a very interesting bill that kind of tries to reintroduce alchemy, whereby they think they can get more money into the transportation system by shifting the chairs in this room, even though we have no power to appropriate the money. So I thought that was a very amusing bill.
Mr. Chair.
Any other questions? The allocation of the scarce resources.
Could you just smile?
It's too many rats in the cage and not enough food.
Okay, Mr. Coulombe, thank you very much for that.
Big rat down here. Big rat on this.
All right, any other questions?
Chair, one last bill that might be of interest. Again, this is carried over, but it deals with, and it's a bill we've seen several years now. It continues to keep coming back, I think there is a possibility it might be reviewed or studied. But again, it looks at changing the allocation of maintenance funding for primary secondary highways from, and basically the focus is to look at achieving a minimal level of disparity among highway construction districts based on performance or asset management performance standards. So that in a nutshell is where we stand right now. Reconvene session is April 18th. Both houses, the House and the Senate, are coming back on March 21st at 3 p.m. Arguably to address the budget. Right now they're both showing as, the meetings are showing as pro forma, so we're not really sure what that means. But at this point, that's where we stand.
Excellent. Thank you very much. Mr. Tyer.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, ladies and gentlemen of the CTB. I will move quickly in light of the hour. Just give you our regularly scheduled VTRANS update. This is the enabling legislation that tells us what we're supposed to do. As you know, we've talked about this many times. The legislation was changed last year so that every governor gets a chance to produce a VTRANS report. The next one on a 25-year increment would be the VTRANS 2040, produced in 2015, so we're taking this opportunity to do a VTRANS update. It is also an opportunity to shift to what we call performance-based planning, which is a fancy way of saying things need to be prioritized because resources are limited. So it does provide a unique opportunity for us in this update in light of the conversation that's been taking place in this room for the last few hours. This is where we are in the process. We started our outreach in the fall. And we're in the middle of three phases, and we'll be coming back to the board with these regularly scheduled updates. We still have a few bit more. We've met with stakeholders and interest groups at this point. There'll be some more public meetings, and then we'll start to wrap it up. Just what we've heard so far, the vision is fine, the goals are fine. But in order to acknowledge that there are limited resources, we need a mechanism for in prioritizing amongst investment priorities, in other words, a way of ranking those. And that's one of the things we've been talking to the user groups about. You can see the rest of the comments there. As a result of breaking the priorities out from the investment strategies, you end up with a four-tiered approach instead of a three-tiered approach. You have the vision, the goals, the priorities, and then the strategies are the things that would actually achieve the priorities. As I said, amongst those priorities, there'll have to be some sort of ranking. What else and then we went on to the second phase of meetings, again, public outreach, public opportunity to participate in the process. Again, you see some items there, add tourism as a part of economic vitality, sharpen the focus of investment, address all modes where appropriate. So this is what the process, unless you tell us differently, this is the process we're going to proceed with. Identify those investments that can move the needle, in essence, improve performance measures, improve the performance standards that we talk about here every so often. And then within that, which ones are the most affordable? You know, we can have some great opportunities to make huge investments, but we may not be able to afford them, so we need to proceed with the ones that are affordable. which ones can we do quickly? In other words, where can we move? You know, we can do a $15 billion project. It takes 20 years to get through environmental and construction, or we can do a $1 billion project. It can have a pretty quick return on investment and make things better for a particular region, and we need to identify those opportunities. The first three you see there are stated in the positive. The last one is actually an assessment tool in the negative, and that is a downside risk if we don't proceed.
Mr. Chairman. Yes, Ms. Coleman. Mr. Secretary, are you using this in its linear fashion, sort of one assessment at a time as it's suggested here, or are you looking at each of these factors simultaneously?
Simultaneously.
So the affordability wouldn't necessarily be any bigger than the risk or amelioration and so forth.
Not necessarily.
Okay, I was
but at this point, they are of equal weight. If you like this process, and we can further define it and tell you if they should be of equal weight or economic vitality should be of more weight.
My concern, Mr. Chairman, was in our 2035 plan, we broke out some key goals and project priorities as having projects of significance that if we didn't do them, we would be at risk.
Right.
For example,
tunnel
improvements.
Right.
And I wonder, is that reevaluated in this process, or are those still sitting on top of the heap as priorities?
At this point, we would not undo anything that's been done.
Okay.
We may run them through this for an FYI, just, but we would not undo anything that's been done.
Thank you.
So in the process of breaking the actual strategies out from the priorities, because they were all one big list, you see what happens, and this, we've discussed this with the groups that we've met with so far. You have an investment priority, which is sort of broad, and then an investment strategy is what you were just referring to, a particular investment or a particular project. And as you can see, this is still in the draft and development stage, and we've been discussing this with our stakeholders and our groups as we've been going through, and we'll continue to do so through the end of the summer. I won't walk you through those in the interest of time. I'll just conclude by saying that we do in this process acknowledge that resources are limited and that there has to be a way of prioritizing investments. And some priorities will be more important than others just because. It's not that we like it that way. It's just an acknowledgement, as I said, of limited resources, and something has to be more important than something else. And if you look at the last V-Trans report, it's very wonderfully done document with all things standing on equal footing, but if you run a calculator tape on the entire thing, it wasn't affordable, and we wanted to change that a little bit, and this provided us an opportunity to do that.
Any questions? Thank you all very much. Let's hear about Jolly Pond.
I don't think there's any tolls on this.
This is the non-total part of the agenda.
Mr. Secretary, Mr. Commissioner, and board members, it's my pleasure to be here today. My name is Robert Middle. I'm the County Administrator for James City County. I'm here to provide you some background on a discontinuance you're considering for a small section of Jolly Pond Road, Route 633 in James City County. I do fully appreciate the special significance of being last on your agenda. I will be extraordinarily brief. I'm joined today by the Chairman of my Board of Supervisors, Mary Jones. She's behind me. Board Member James Eisenhower, also behind me, and my Director of Development Management. I don't think Delegate Hoagie is here, but she's been following us very closely. She expressed her support of our issue. First up, we'll show you just briefly an orientation. I have a larger copy for you, those who are visually impaired, like me. But if you look at that area map, you'll see on the bottom right the city of Williamsburg, immediately above it, York County. coming from right to left, Interstate 64, Route 60, Route 199. And going to the far left of the map, you see the entirety of Jolly Pond Road highlighted in orange and in red. Strategically, at that intersection, the little star, that is the dam, and that is the point of discontinuance that we're seeking your approval on for today. You'll notice that just the geography of that particular point makes it extremely difficult for general access for the citizenry down in that neck of the woods. There are several hundred folks who live very near that dam, as well as our emergency services and just general services to get to that part of our county. This is a timeline to prepare, just I won't go through all of these, that just shows you that we've been at this for several years. What I will note is that we've done engineering analyses of this dam in 2007, 2008, and as recent as 2011. In that same time period, there have been 44 significant rainfall events, inclusive of a hurricane, which is 6.7 inches in our part of the world. And in that entire time, the other thing we take from this engineering report or analysis is that there's been very little change, very little degradation or deterioration of the structure, even with that passage of time. It's been around for some point in excess of 100 years and still survives today quite well. The structure in that time has never been overtopped, and there's never been any, like I said, further deterioration. From all of the analysis, we know that the dam is classified as low hazard. There's basically nothing downstream that would be impacted by a breach. The impound area itself is also relatively small, and the lake is, again, relatively shallow, so there's not a large source of water that might go in the event of a breach. We are fully aware that the dam, as it is now situated, does not meet the Department of Conservation and Recreation dam safety standards. That is precisely why VDOT had to close the road and cease its function, because they have to recognize that. It is not up to standard because the spillway design did not pass a 100-year storm. We've also done, just as we look at prospective use, a vehicle count to assure that the number of vehicles per day, which is less than 400, still keeps it in the low hazard threshold. And again, that's one of the things we've tried to evaluate and trying to understand what liability or what risk might be associated with this. We also fully understand that at some point in the future, DCR may take it upon themselves to undertake an enforcement action. We don't think it's highly probable, but it can happen, and in the event it does, the private dam owner would have to deal with that. We do not own the dam itself. Our responsibility is the road surface, your responsibility, hopefully soon ours, going over the dam. We have evaluated, we think, very carefully any of the risks associated with the road and the dam. We find them both to be very minimal and acceptable. In the event we receive your approval, the things that we will do going forward to ensure safety of the traveling public is, one, implement a weight restriction program. We've talked to your engineering staff, and we believe that around the eight-ton vehicle limit would be appropriate, and we may need to tweak that, but that's just what we're thinking now. We will have a stringent monitoring program, both for normal weather conditions, perhaps on a weekly basis, as well as in the event of inclement weather, a nor'easter, hurricane, something of that nature, which would increase the frequency of inspection and also probably and most likely do road closures until the event had passed. We are prepared to undertake any repairs to the structure in the event there is any degradation associated with leakage or seepage, but our engineers have told us to this point in time it's not necessary because the few leaks that are in, and then there's a couple, really haven't done anything to deteriorate the structure, and it's not necessary at this point in time, but we are prepared to do it if it's required going forward. Respectfully ask for your approval of this discontinuance, and it's my pleasure to answer any questions you might have.
Any questions? Yes, Mr. Lane. I've reviewed this with the district administrator, and essentially we're removing the road from us to the liability of James City County, and the administrator there approved such, and I would hope that you would support the resolution this afternoon to approve this discontinuance.
Any other questions? Yes,
Mr.
Ellis.
Chairman. Oh, no, Mr. Madeau, this might be a better question for Dennis, but what the traffic count was on the road before closure, wasn't it?
We believe it's similar to what you saw in the background material that, I'm sorry, you didn't see it, but in the vehicle count. We had to go back to historic records to look at what the vehicle counts were, and we came up with a 400 per day. As going forward with the weight restriction, it should be even less than that.
You haven't seen any, I guess, changes in traffic pattern on any of the surrounding facilities, you know, because...
Since it's been closed, yes. But
oh, really?
No.
Okay,
no.
Right.
We've had the addition of some schools way up on the... I go back to the map here. You see where the Jolly Pond Road makes a little bubble to the north. There's some new schools that are added up there, but the access to that is equally good at the top end as opposed to from the bottom end. So we don't think there's significant impact to that.
Any other questions? All right. Thank you very much.
Most welcome. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you. Sure, if I may. Oh, yeah. Ms. Lane.
Just briefly, guys, in front of you, I put the annual report for the Chesapeake Bay Bridge Tunnel for your review. As you know, I'm the CTB's representative on that. And really, I'm going to issue an invitation. I'm chairman this year, and we have OPSEL 2012 in Virginia starting, or in the Norfolk area, starting on June the 8th. Mike, I'll give you an invitation to come out and be our guest at the first island of the Chesapeake Bay Bridge Tunnel to watch the tall ships come through the channel. There'll be parking and everything. So I'll be getting with you. If you see that, I'd love for you to come attend.
Do we have to pay the toll?
No toll.
I'm toll.
You especially. You're going to pay for all of us, Mr. Miller. You're going to pay for
all of us. Only if you're from Charlottesville, you have to pay for
personal parking and front row stadium seats watching the ships come in.
All right, Ms. Lane, I got to ask you this. So how much cash you guys got over there?
We have unrestricted assets of about $200 million.
Mr. Rich.
Well, I just wanted to ask the commissioner while we've got the commissioner here. It seems like this, what's been happening over at the General Assembly has been kind of hard on you and your staff and disruptive as you try to plan. Has this caused you a lot of expense and time with staff to try to deal with contracts when we don't have a budget? I mean, it's kind of disconcerting that you all have to go through this as you try to move money out. I mean, we've been trying to get you to do that, and then there's no budget. Can you tell us how this has impacted you and the VDOT staff, this budget mess?
I think the question was, if we do not have the budget, how will that impact the operations or the staff?
Is it starting now? Are you starting to feel the pinch right now? Or
we have not started feeling the pinch yet. And it will probably be in April we're going to start sending out letters at that point to all of our contractors.
April 15th. And tell them why April 15th.
We have to do it April 15th. We have to give them a 60-day notice per the contract. A 60-day notice to shut down any contracts. And then we give ourselves a cushion because once the project is shut down, we then have to have 30 days to pay all of the bills. All bills must be paid by June 25th, I believe it is, because after July 1, we will have no authority to spend at that point.
Now, will we incur fees and penalties because of this?
There will probably be some penalties or claims related to delay claims, shutting down the project, additional costs for remobilization, because we're going to have to demobilize the job, and then we'll have to mobilize again. So there will be costs associated with that. At this point, we have not quantified exactly how much all that will be.
What's our deadline? If they don't act by a certain period of time, when does it really start kicking in and hurting us?
May 1st.
On April 15th, we'll start sending out notices, and then first part of May, we'll start saying, start preparing to shut down your projects.
So this whole thing can really damage our transportation system, really, if they don't get on it.
Yes, it will shut down our projects.
Damage our reputation, yeah, absolutely. So,
And the add to it is, I mean, once you shut down, you said it will remobilize. The problem is we'll lose the season.
Yeah.
So it's not just simply we'll start back up. Yeah. I mean, it's essentially projects will be put on.
We'll set the projects back to lay in. Yeah, that's bad news.
Mr. Drake, Director Drake, could you mention where you all, because you have different timelines?
Yeah, well, we're very similar to VDOT in that we would have to send out notices, because if our transit companies are going to shut down service, they're going to have to start doing that and telling people during the May time frame. So we have the same thing, that we will have an earlier timeline in order to get invoices in so that we can pay them. We would be contacting our local government very early May to say, are you going to fund the service, even though we wouldn't be able to provide state funding, or for those that we do federal funding for, we wouldn't be able to do that. And we also do not expect to be able to run our passenger trains. So all of that is kind of in a similar timeline to Greg's, although not exactly the same. And we also will have startup and shutdown costs on construction projects that are going on now.
Secretary.
It will be a big hit.
Scary.
Could we get into a situation, hopefully not, but like the federal government, where we're operating on continuing resolutions?
We don't have that.
We don't have that authority.
No.
Stop.
Cancel all.
So listen, if you don't hear from us, the July meeting's canceled.
I have one caveat to my answer. The $200 million is unrestricted, but set aside for the Thimble Shoals Channel. So we can start that in 2007.
Just asking. We've got some great projects if you'd like to invest in.
Before disclosure, Mr. Lane is now the chairman, and there is a chairman's fund.
That's great. That's a great deal of equity putting in that Midtown Tunnel contract.
That's how we got the seats, the front row seats.
I can guarantee that.
Good point.
All righty. This ends up the workshop. We'll break for, how about, 15 minutes? And then we'll kick into the regular meeting. We'll start up at 1:20.